This was something quite different, but I find myself approaching events in the Middle East this morning in a sort of strangely split fashion, a sort of dichotomy, if you prefer. Because on the one hand, I'm interested in the micro, in the personal, which is, what signs are you already seeing? I've got to get a new mortgage in January, and I am worried about what the market is going to look like then. A friend of mine currently looking for a new mortgage now, because the old one is coming to an end, and their own advisor said, well, the world is on fire. These aren't words you want to hear from a financial advisor. And then, of course, there's the meta, the big picture. What have we learned?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, two men have been arrested in connection with an arson attack on ambulances belonging to a Jewish community charity. Four vehicles were set alight in Golders Green in northwest London in the early hours of Monday morning. LBC's reporter Fraser Knight says Scotland Yard is still following lines of inquiry.
Counter-terrorism police who took charge of the investigation say they are aware that video footage seems to show at least three people were involved in setting the fires. And so while the arrests of two people they say looks to be a major breakthrough, their investigation is still ongoing.
Iran has confirmed it's received a 15-point plan from the United States over reaching a potential ceasefire. Earlier, Tehran disputed Donald Trump's claim of diplomatic progress, saying the president is negotiating with himself. Figures show that inflation in the UK remained at 3% last month. It's in line with predictions, but doesn't take into account rises in petrol prices caused by the war in Iran. It's emerged health officials in Kent delayed reporting the first case of meningitis during the recent outbreak. It took 2 days before the alarm was raised on Friday the 13th of March. Doctors have a legal duty to report cases of infection as soon as they're suspected, Health Secretary Wes Streeting's told LBC this morning. While he's taking the matter seriously, he's satisfied with the response.
I have to say, beyond what happened there, the way in which the NHS Trust, the universities and colleges and schools in Canterbury and the young people themselves have responded has been exemplary. Right. We've seen confirmed cases and suspected cases beginning to fall. That's encouraging. I'm not complacent. We're not out of the woods yet. But we've responded rapidly and I think we've contained this outbreak in the way that we needed to.
East Kent Hospital's University Foundation Trust has acknowledged it missed an opportunity to alert officials sooner. And the first female Archbishop of Canterbury, Dame Sarah Mullally, will be enthroned in a formal ceremony later. It'll mark the symbolic start to her position as head of the Church of England following her appointment in October. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 93 at 10,057. The pound buys $1.33 and €1.15. LBC weather, a mix of sunny spells and patchy rain for large parts of the UK. Some wintry showers on northern hills, a high of 10 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Hey Sainsbury's, I'm cooking for everyone this Easter, but I don't want to break the bank. Got any tasty offers?
Well, with Nectar, there's half price on selected sides of salmon. And selected beef joints and whole legs of lamb are better than half price.
Ooh, they'll be as happy as my wallet.
Sainsbury's, good food for all of us. 18 plus, Nectar required, excludes locals, ends 7th of April, subject to availability. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It's 3 minutes after 10, and before we get stuck into the conversation about world affairs, I did find myself yesterday thinking about the water companies in the context of the story about vets, and that might sound a little odd, but I just want to get this in front of you before I forget or before it slips off my personal radar. And the reason why they've had to cap prescription charges for vets is the same reason why we're so angry with water companies. It's what happens when private capital, private venture, venture capitalists move into previously quite well-regulated and well-run areas and prioritise taking money out of things over everything else. I don't need a PhD in economics to understand what happens if you buy something and you're your concern, your motivation is not to make sure that the sewers work or that everything is improved or that the water will never stop coming out of our taps. Your priority is to make as much money as possible. You don't buy a chain of vets, or you don't start buying up local vets that were previously family run in order to indulge your passion for caring for kittens or your tendency for tortoises. You do it because you see an opportunity to make a ton of money. And that's why you start ramping up prices as high as you can, and that's why you postpone repairs and maintenance on waterways and sewers, because you're literally sitting around a table with people being offered a choice. Should we take this money for ourselves, or shall we spend it on fixing sewers? And you now live in a society where everybody in that room says, shut up. We'd take it for ourselves, of course. And then a few years down the line, ITV or Channel 4 make a drama about what an absolute scandal it is, and we all get very, very upset, and we wonder why we weren't aware of it sooner. Well, you choose not to be. You choose not to be aware of it sooner. You choose to ignore the voices telling you that so-called think tanks on Tufton Street dedicated to deregulation and rampant profiteering are polluting our public discourse in much the same way that sewage is polluting our public waterways. We choose not to care. We choose not to notice. And I have enormous sympathy for everybody in that situation because of all the voices, all the energy, all the effort put into persuading you either that there is nothing to see here or that you should be looking over there. Oh, look, some immigrants. And the next thing you know, everything eventually has fallen victim to the cult of the profiteer, the profiteering cult, as you could call it. And it was vets yesterday. I mention that only because I think I probably owe you an apology. I don't think I was dismissive. I don't think I was dismissive. But I certainly expressed a degree of skepticism. Well, what I said was I have always been allergic to dead cats and conspiracy theories, right? And the argument that Trump does what he does solely to make money is not one to which I fully subscribe. But two things can be true at the same time. We took a caller. I'm struggling at the moment with questions regarding Trump and the Middle East. It's not a big problem because I have, as you've probably noticed, an awful lot to say. I don't really today. I don't think much has changed in the 24 hours since we last spoke. He's having negotiations with people who say he's not having negotiations about a war he says he's already won but hasn't finished yet. That's it, is it? Is that your takeaway? Is that your two-line distillation of everything that's going on in the world at the moment? He's having negotiations with people who say he isn't having negotiations about a war he says he's won but hasn't finished. So I don't have much to add to that. But we took a call on, what day is it today, Keith? Thank you. We took a call on Monday. I took it for a drink on Tuesday. No, we took a call on Monday, and it was a nice lad, a perfectly pleasant caller, and he suggested that the reason why Donald Trump is doing what he's doing, which was a sort of fundamental question that I was asking you on Monday, was in order to, quotes, manipulate the markets. And you could see already at that point some evidence that the markets had, if not been manipulated, then certainly some people appeared to be party to information that the rest of the world wasn't party to moments before Donald Trump announced peace negotiations were underway with Iran. And about 40 minutes before, as we predicted to the nanosecond, about 40 minutes before Iran announced that, no, they're not. We have no idea what you're talking about. Today, of course, they accuse the United States president of negotiating with himself. If you've got the energy, we should probably compare the so-called 15-point peace plan that has apparently been sent to Iran with the one that Barack Obama signed and Donald Trump decided to set fire to. But, as I say, I'm not sure we want to go down that particular avenue today, because what is now being reported on both sides of the Atlantic is that about $500 million in bets on the oil market were placed minutes before President Trump announced that the United States would postpone strikes on Iranian energy targets. So the statement came in at about 11:05 on Monday. And prior to that, about $500 million worth of bets. Think how rich you need to be, what circle you need to be in, to be part of a movement that can lay its hands on $500 million. I mean, what if it's not even a risk? What if I am saying to you, all right, I've got $500 million, but I can't afford to bet it in case I lose. And you say to me, you can't possibly lose, because we know exactly what is going to happen. As soon as the president announces that peace negotiations are underway, then the price of oil will drop. It might go back up again. So the only risk you're taking is deciding when to cash in the profits that you've made on the fall in oil prices. But There's no real risk involved because I can categorically guarantee to you that the price will come down. About 15 minutes before that social media post, 5,100 lots relating to the future cost of North Sea-sourced Brent crude and US-sourced West Texas intermediate crude changed hands. An unprecedented scale of trade, and it's all visible in black and white on the London Stock Exchange Group data. This doesn't even take into account these weird new markets where you can use cryptocurrency or Bitcoin to place effective bets on almost anything, including the movement of various markets. This, if you like, is on the outside, this is in daylight. This is unfolding in front of us. $500 million. $500 million in bets on, well, on the inevitable consequences of Donald Trump making the announcement that he made. And what do you do now? Because remember I said to you on Monday that we had arrived in a place where the theocratic propaganda machine of the Iranian regime was saying one thing and the President of the United States of America was saying the other. And you were not confident that one was telling the truth and one was lying. You were not supremely confident that you could call it. I think we probably mostly lean towards the Iranian regime. On the principle of the stopped clock. And also on the principle of if they were negotiating, why wouldn't they say so? So you've got, and this is certainly the point that's been made by a lot of people in the United States of America, some of whom were once sympathetic, if not to Trump, then certainly to the Republican Party. So we've got something that you can't quite believe. I think this is why I was obsessed about 3 months ago with normalcy or normality bias. Do you remember? I said, just can't quite let go of the idea that things can't be quite as bonkers as they actually are. Well, I let go of it successfully, and I hope I've helped you to do so as well. Or indeed, if you were there before I was, thank you for helping me get there. But the liberation, the sense of liberation you get from just acknowledging that you have to see everything now through the lens of his deranged dishonesty. It's funny watching august right-wing leaning commentators come around to this point of view in the last few days. Andrew Neil doing it in the Daily Mail today, Daniel Finkelstein in the Times. The latter, of course, a much more reliable guide to events than the former, who was halfway up Trump's bottom not too long ago. But the final realization that you are wasting your time if you try to deploy traditional tools of analysis with this man, because everything is, if not depraved, and I believe that it is, then just fundamentally dishonest. So you've got these two things, right? The first is we have arrived in a place where we would probably trust the murderous theocratic propaganda machine coming out of Tehran more than we would trust the President of the United States of America on this very specific question. That is inconceivable. And now we find ourselves contemplating the possibility of Donald Trump being complicit in a massive scam, $500 million scam. And the question remains, is that plausible? Do you think that's possible? What does Occam's razor tell us? How else would you account for $500 million being placed on bets contingent upon a massive shift in oil prices just moments before Donald Trump made an announcement absolutely stone cold guaranteed to make a massive shift in oil prices? And again, you sort of find yourself looking at the ground beneath your feet and wondering whether it's some sort of illusion or some sort of mirage. I want to come at the moment from two angles this morning, and they're quite different, actually. My thanks to Robert here for reminding me or informing me. I can't remember whether I ever knew this. I opened the program wondering, trying to recall what the difference was between the left brain and the right brain. The left hemisphere is abstraction. Facts. It attends to the parts, writes Robert in Malmesbury. The right seeks to comprehend the whole big picture. And that's where my brain is today. I've got two very different but entirely linked questions for you. The first is prosaic, quotidian, the normal. And that is, just tell us, tell everybody listening, what signs you are already seeing of the impact of this, because we haven't done that properly. I've given you the big headlines, the banners about the IEA saying that this oil crisis is going to be worse than the 70s. I've given you the Gulf states saying that this is the new Suez. But what I haven't given you is, I can't afford to renew my mortgage, or I might have to sell my... Do you see what I mean? So what I want to know is, because what's going to happen, and once again we find ourselves in the lonely position of focusing on truth and facts, you're going to get the kind of clowns and cretins who encouraged war, who claimed that we should have been hopping into Donald Trump's fetid bed and marching with him into yet another illegal engagement in the Middle East. Those clowns are going to claim that the economic impact of the war they wanted is somehow Keir Starmer's fault, even though he had the vision and the wit to stay as far out of it as he reasonably could. So all of the columnists, all of the commentators, all of the politicians who detached themselves entirely from evidence-based truth back in 2016 and veer ever further from it through the Straits of Boris Johnson, through the canal of Liz Truss, through the seas of austerity and the oceans of Brexit, they sail ever further away from observable truth and evidence. They'll be lying to you soon, if they're not already, about the economic impact of Donald Trump and Benjamin Netanyahu's illegal war somehow being the fault of Keir Starmer. So we need to get in twice. We need to get in on what the economic impacts already are. How are you being hit? 0345 6060 973. You're trying to book a holiday. You're trying to renew your mortgage. You're trying to fill the car. You're trying to fill a trolley in Morrison's, whatever it is. You've just gone, and you may not even have realised that, oh, blimey, that's because of the war. But you have noticed that's just gone up by an amount that I can't quite credit. Friend's mortgage broker told her yesterday, the world is on fire. Someone else told me yesterday that their mortgage broker had suggested that a 3-year deal looks quite attractive at the moment, to which he responded by saying, yeah, but at the end of the 3-year deal, what is the world going to look like? That's going to coincide roughly with an American and a British election. We could have fascists in the White House and fascists in Downing Street, and the economic impact of fascism always hurts ordinary people. So would you sign that now? I don't know. So that's the micro. That's the personal. That's the left brain. How is it hitting you? How is it affecting you? What are the facts of the pensions? How are your pensions? And I don't normally do phone-ins like this because I'm an idiot, right? And despite being 54 years old, I've still, in my mind somewhere, got the attitude to finances of a 14-year-old boy. Everything, or of Mr. McCorber. Something will come up. We'll be fine. Happily, I married someone who's a bit more responsible than I am. So we're probably not going to disappear over the precipice of financial oblivion in 5 years' time. But if you are a grown-up and you pay attention to these things, prices, mortgages. Also, of course, you know, I'm insulated by my income from some of the most sharp edges of economic difficulties. Let's not beat about the bush or pretend otherwise. But most of the people making these decisions are also very insulated. In fact, most of the people wanging on about what a good idea it would have been to hop into bed with Donald Trump are even more insulated from the realities of what that would have created than almost anybody else in the country or the world. If you've got $500 million to spare on a probably insider trading bet, then you are unlikely to be affected by the cost of gas or indeed the cost of baked beans. But you are. And I want you to tell me what's going on. I really do. Alyssa hits the floor running. This is an example of what might sound prosaic, but occasionally is very important. My weekly, normally £40 shop, including cat food, was £60 yesterday. I nearly cried in Aldi. So how is it affecting you? 0345 6060 973. And then we move to the other side of the brain, the big picture, the right side of the brain. And this is where my own instincts take me more readily than they do to the left side. So I really need your help with the detail, the small questions, if you like, the personal as opposed to the political. But I also want your help with the political, with the meta, with the big picture. There was a moment, I wasn't alive, but maybe you were. There was a moment in 1956 when the House of Commons was debating Suez. Anthony Eden, the Prime Minister at the time, talked about what the British government was and was not prepared to do. And his government was not prepared to embark on a policy of abject appeasement. They thought, he thought, we thought that you could call President Nasser's bluff regarding the de-internationalisation of the Suez Canal. It did not end well. And what it taught us in 1956 was that Britain had ceased to be a major player on the world stage. What are we learning this week? What have we learned this month from events? I have learned that one man should not be able to wield the sort of power that Donald Trump has been wielding in ways that I never learned when the incumbent in the White House was perhaps not the most competent person on the planet, but was not avowedly corrupt. That idea that the very nature of US democracy is fatally flawed because it can allow someone like Trump to climb to the top of the tree, that is a big picture lesson. 0345 6060973. So I want the little picture lessons, what's going on in your world financially, economically, and I want the big picture. What are we learning? And can I do this? How's it making you feel? How's it making you feel? Your financial advisor says the world is on fire. Or your mortgage broker says the world is on fire. What do you want me to do? How's it all making you feel? I interviewed someone yesterday who's a brilliant satirist, which means that historically they've always had a very close relationship with the news. And they said to me, I'm having to look away more than ever at the moment. I said, oh, great, my kids need shoes. You look away from the news, you're probably not tuning into this. But I understand that sensation. I understand that sentiment. I just wonder how it's all making you feel. So you've got apparent or alleged or possible insider trading. You've got negotiations going on with someone who says there aren't any negotiations going on about a war that is already won but also somehow still not over. You've got the personal impact of prices everywhere from the petrol pumps to the pet shop. You've got the lessons about the role the state of the world. The state of the world. And I want it all this morning. I want all of it. Any angle you've got. I'll be the judge of whether it's interesting or not. You just ring me and tell me about it. Don't worry about self-editing or self-assessment, to use a financial term. I just want to know what's going on, both in your world and in your mind about the world. 0345 6060 973.
LBC.
Whether your dreams are calling you outdoors to reconnect with nature or towards moments of pampering and relaxation to rejuvenate your soul, you can bank on Lloyds to help make it happen. We've been asking listeners what their aspirations are for the year ahead to help create the ultimate prize packages to inspire that first step. Enter now for your chance to win one of three incredible experiences thanks to Lloyds and the nation's aspirations. Choose the prize for you at lbc.co.uk.
This is 40-year-old Kathy, mother of two and self-confessed telly addict.
Ready? Oh, look at you. That's brilliant. Well done.
This is also Kathy, working as part of a team to keep things calm at her local prison.
Listen, speak to me.
And helping someone's son write his first letter home in 8 months.
Well done. You should be really proud.
Thank you, miss.
An extraordinary job done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
Let's stop there. Being a soldier, it's exciting. You already know that. What you want to know is, what's in it for me? I wanted to learn leadership skills from the experts.
I wanted to get paid to earn qualifications.
I wanted more confidence. And look, I'm on the radio.
That's what was in it for me.
Get skills, get qualified, get confident. Army. Recruiting now. Search Army Jobs.
Now.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
It is 10:23 and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. I hope this works. I mean, it's a little bit different from what we normally do. The combination of the personal and the political and the impact upon both of those things, of the unfolding tragedy, disaster, catastrophe, whatever you want to call it in the Middle East. A couple of you crossed with me for not explaining a little more about the Suez crisis, which is absolutely fair enough. 1956. The Suez Canal, a kind of crucial canal, an absolutely intrinsic passage to Western interests. Sound familiar? Hormuz? Anybody? Was owned by Britain and France. A kind of quite hard to swallow post-colonial fact that Britain and France owned a canal that went smack through the middle of Egypt. And after the West decided to withdraw funding for the Aswan Dam, President Nasser of Egypt decided to take the Suez Canal into Egyptian ownership. He essentially sought to nationalise it. Britain and France were outraged, as they would, because they owned it. So they issued an ultimatum that Nasser ignored. And after he ignored the ultimatum, Britain and France, along with Israel, decided to invade Egypt. They decided to attack Egypt. And this is crucial. The United States and the Soviet Union passionately, strongly, vehemently opposed the invasion, bringing economic and diplomatic pressure to bear upon their European allies that was unsustainable, leading to the withdrawal from Egypt, the control of the canal being ceded to the Egyptians, and the resignation of Anthony Eden. It's a funny one, that, isn't it? Because I don't know whether Kemi Badenoch and Daily Mail columnists have the history to understand that when they talk, we are always in lockstep with the United States. Dick Littlejohn in the Daily Mail has never been more ashamed to be British because we always... It's like Suez never happened. It's also like Vietnam never happened, if you want to have a look at the wisdom of American military engagements historically. But Suez is the big lesson here. You can't rely upon American support, and Britain and France were no longer massive imperial powers. I wonder whether any lessons of that nature or that scale are being taught by the events of the last 3 weeks. I don't know. But I do know this. You're watching numbers. You're watching your personal financial situation, and you are registering, at the very least, concern. Share those concerns with me. Ian's in Watford. Ian, what made you pick up the phone?
Well, I'm just one of your regulars who listen every day.
Thank you.
And I think the whole of the world is, you know, in a mess. And if you're talking about the personal side of it...
You can do either if you want, mate, whatever.
Well, I'll do both.
Go on, then.
I mean, my father said, when you open your mouth, some fool speaks. And I think we've got one president who's not presidential, right? And if he just kept his mouth shut for 1 minute, I think we might get somewhere.
Yeah, but you say know. That, Ian. Someone made a ton of money on Monday as a direct consequence of him not keeping his mouth shut.
Well, it isn't that. It's the crypto. So, you know, I beg you to work him out, you know.
Sure.
I mean, he says... I mean, the first thing he says, we're winning the war. This is all to pacify the markets, right?
Looks
then we're
that
making
way.
A deal. We're making a deal. Then the markets go back up again because we think we're talking to them and all this. It's a, I won't say the way he words, but basically, he's blagging it, right?
Looks that way. It certainly looks that way.
And secondly, if you're an individual like me who worked 32 years, 6 days a week,
yes.
at a little business, and put your money into a retirement fund, you know, like we all do in the pensions.
Yes, all the grown-ups.
Yes, we're all very sensible, right?
Yeah.
The reality is, if I just make it a number,
Go on.
To give people an idea. If you have £1 million as a fund, which is a lot of money, and the markets go down 1%, you lose 10,000. If it goes up, you make.
Yeah.
Now, this market's gone down at least 6%. I close my eyes and put my hands in the ears sometimes. You know,
so you're watching your pension fund, are you? Is that what you're telling me?
Oh, I look at it, or you look at it, and you can see it drifting down. Now, there's a lot of people who rely on their pensions, hard-working people, right? And believe me, you start to take a salary, and then you're thinking, hold on a moment, I haven't got so much in my fund. I can't afford to take so much out. You know, this is just one element. The second one I'd say is, you know, if petrol went to £2 a litre,
yes.
and you put out, and we put in 50 litres, that's £100, right? And
yes.
I was saying to your young lady,
she's not technically my young lady, but I take your point.
You're a very nice lady.
Yes.
She says to me, what do you do, Ian? And I said, I go on, you know what I do now?
What?
I go to the petrol station.
Yeah.
I have a full tank of petrol, but when I use a quarter of it, I dip in again and fill up.
In right? case it goes up again.
Yeah, well, you don't know what's going to happen because we're talking about at some point, if this goes on and on and on, we're going to have rationing. Food's going to be more expensive. You're not going to be getting food. People are going to be buying jerry cans and filling up with jerry cans again. That was what happened in 72 and the other petrol station, petrol prices. People bought jerry cans and filled up. You know, you can see it occasionally in the petrol stations, the odd person doing it. You know, life is not what it is. The narrative, if that's the right word these days, inverted commas,
bless you.
Totally
it's a perfect word. Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
I think you, Ian, see clearly where responsibility for all of this lies. The all roads lead to the White House. And of course, to Israel as well. But in terms of our most obvious conclusions, this is a consequence of Donald Trump's combination of idiocy and vanity. Do you think, as more people feel the pinch that you describe, and under your own analysis, you are quite comfortable at the moment, but still feeling the pinch, or at least watching the pinch, you're aware of the pinch. Do you think in this country, at this time, people will add 2 to 2 and come up with 4, or do you think people will be susceptible to lies about it all being Keir Starmer's fault or Rachel Reeves's fault or nothing to do with Donald Trump, or I don't know, Nigel Farage will probably try to blame it on Bernard Manning? Do you think the average punter is going to be as clear-eyed about these potential catastrophes as you are?
I think, personally, the Keir Starmer's quite rational and he's trying to do his best to keep us out of a war, which he knows he could be dragged into.
Yes.
That's my personal
Which doesn't
view.
Help, which doesn't mean we avoid the consequences, but at least we avoid responsibility for the madness or the
He's trying to protect the public as much as he can as a responsible Prime Minister. And they've got plans, and this government aren't stupid. They are laying the ground for catastrophe, which the public don't realise is coming at them as a tsunami, if you want to call it that.
Tsunami,
right?
Yeah.
Tsunami, sorry.
That's all right.
And to be perfectly frank, the clouds are looming over. This war, he's got 2 aircraft carriers going there and another one coming along in about 2 weeks with a whole lot of troops with boots on, right?
Yeah.
I said on one programme, this is my personal view. Don't have 2 aircrafts there going on a little jolly, right?
But you know what you're doing now. You see what you're doing now, Ian? You're treating him like a normal president. And I mean, the temptation is almost irresistible because you're about to say, well, you don't do X unless you're going to do Y. But it's Donald Trump. Donald Trump does X and Y never happens. Donald Trump adds 2 to 2 and comes up with 179. It is simply not. I mean, it might be true. It might be the case that the clock has stopped and the time is correct, but it won't have anything to do with the kind of calculations or tools that we've previously used, which you were about to do. I'm only stopping you because I'm late for the news, but I did just notice that. Oh, he's sending aircraft carriers, therefore he must be intending to invade. That's not how he works. That's not how he works. He might invade, but you can't conclude that he will invade as a consequence of sending the troops there in the first place. He could order them back by tea time. It's 10:31. Dominic Ellis has your headlines.
2 men have been arrested in connection with an arson attack on ambulances belonging to a Jewish community charity. 4 vehicles were set alight in Golders Green in northwest London in the early hours of Monday. Mediators in Pakistan say Iran has received a 15-point plan from the United States over reaching a potential ceasefire. Tehran has disputed Donald Trump's claim of diplomatic progress, saying the president is negotiating with himself. And the former Conservative Justice Secretary, Crispin Blunt, has pleaded guilty to possessing illegal drugs, including cannabis and crystal meth. The 65-year-old has admitted 4 drug charges, which relate to a police raid on his home in Surrey in 2023. LBC weather, a mix of sunny spells and patchy rain for large parts of the UK. Some wintry showers on northern hills, a high of 10 degrees.
This is LBC. Listen on the move with the LBC app.
You've probably been with the same energy supplier for decades. And why wouldn't you be? Loyalty matters. But lately, bigger hasn't always felt better. You've probably dealt with long waits and endless automated menus in search of someone who can actually help. Octopus Energy is now Britain's biggest energy supplier, trusted by over 8 million customers, because we do things differently. Our people focus on the most important thing, you. When you call, you'll speak to a real person. No robotic scripts, no computer says no. Just an honest conversation with someone who actually wants to help. Join the millions who've already made the move. Octopus Energy, recommended by Which, a record 9 years running. Visit octopus.energy/better for verification.
Imagine you in a nice comfy seat with your hands behind your head. Taking in the views, instead of taking on the road, maybe even taking a nap. That's the bliss of getting where you need to go without worrying about driving. Book for your train journey via avantiwestcoast.co.uk and we'll take you there. Avanti West Coast. Feel good travel.
So, what's on your to-do list today? Why don't you check if you're eligible for pension credit? It tops up your pension income and also opens up help with heating bills, council tax, and more. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 99 1234. There's nothing to lose. Check today. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
Calling all young creatives. Kickstart your career in media. Apply now and join us in years 10 or 12 at Global Academy. Globalacademy.com.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
10:34 is the time. Good morning, James. Right, it's Matt in Northampton. I don't think this... Northampton's having a good week, isn't it? I mean, that's where our Strait of Hormuz expert hailed from as well. Crikey, who'd have thought that Northampton was going to have its day in the sun in this week of all weeks? I don't think this will put me in idiot's corner. I'll be the judge of that, pal. But I literally just want it all to stop, because not only has petrol gone through the roof, but energy bills will too. And even if you don't have a mortgage, people renting will see rises as well. Just when things looked to be going in the right direction, it's all going to go bad. I know the regime is horrible, but I just want life here to be good. I hope I've described that properly. Matt, you've described it perfectly. And Thought writes, to think I actually miss George W. Bush. I spent years laughing at him and the Americans who voted for him, but now I miss normal politicians. That won't last, Thought. There's a piece in the Daily Mail today, but in fact, I must get his name right, by somebody saying he's never felt as unconfident about the grasp of the matters economic by a senior politician than he does about Rachel Reeves. I think it's Alex Brummer, the city editor. And that's in a newspaper that told you Liz Truss was an economic genius. That's how short our collective memories are, mate. Maybe not you, Thor. I hope not. A name like that, you should have a very long memory. But, I mean, going back at least 3,000 years. But the point, of course, stands that you can't rely upon the people who are paid for their opinions and their insights to remember what happened yesterday, because yesterday they were telling you Liz Truss is a genius. But I know what you mean about George W. Bush, and that's my takeaway. I'm asking about the lessons we are currently learning, and one is, to paraphrase Kanye West, no one man should have that much power. There it is. But he does. I'm glad, says Mikey, that someone is finally mentioning Suez. I don't think I'm alone on that, Mikey. There's a rather good piece in the Times today by Paul Ovenden pointing out the parallels. And this speaks for many from Mark. I listen to you every day. I have done for years. It's very wise, Mark. I don't think there's anything that can be said about how I feel about our country or the world. I'm scared for my 5-year-old grandson. I'm scared for humanity. I wish we had some sense in our leaders and could trust someone. And then you make a bad situation worse by suggesting that I get involved in politics, Mark. I think, like Ian in Watford, that Keir Starmer is doing a much better job at the moment than anybody in that kind of four donkeys of the crapopalypse universe is going to give him credit for. And I've got some clips for you. You only come for the clips these days, don't you? Just the little daily reminders of how mad everything, including, well, especially Donald Trump is, but that's coming around in a moment. First, John's in King's Lynn. John, what made you pick up the phone?
Hello there, James. It was your question earlier on where you said, how do we actually feel at the moment?
Yes.
For me, it almost feels quite hopeless.
Go on.
In the way that for a number of years now in the UK, we've had the likes of Boris Johnson, the likes of Truss, and now Trump and what he's doing, you know, and for example, when the Truss person was Prime Minister, you know, for example, she wiped out what, 30 grand off my pension pot.
Did she? You could see it go down on the screen.
Yeah.
You could see it disappear. You could wave goodbye. I mean, it's gone up a bit since then. It's gone back up a bit since then.
Yeah, it has. And then it went down again when Trump did his first idiocy, whatever that was. I can't remember what that was now.
Yeah.
And then it was just gathering back to where it was pre-Truss. And now Trump's done this. And now it's gone back down again. You know, I just retired.
Right.
And, you know, you think, all that planning that I've done for a number of years, it just goes down the pan because of one lunatic who all he cares about, and all any of these people care about, is lining their own pockets.
You think that? Increasingly, but partly because of that story that is now established, it is now credible, that $500 million in bets on the oil market were placed minutes before Trump made his announcement on Monday about postponing attacks.
I think it's been hiding in plain sight for a long time.
See, I used to think my job was to argue you out of that position and to say to you, no, come off it, mate. There's no way you can rise to these positions. You can't be the most powerful man in the world and be using it simply as an opportunity to enrich yourself, your family and your mates. But even as I say those words out loud to you, John, they sound pathetic today, don't they?
Pathetic's probably not the word. Maybe naive. I don't know.
But, you can say pathetic if you want, mate. I'm a big boy now.
Yeah. Well, maybe so then. I'm certainly not the ring up to insult you. But for example, I have to do a lot of miles in the car every week.
Right.
A couple of weeks ago, it was a tank a week was £65. I've just put £82 in this morning.
Gosh.
Which will last me another week if I'm lucky. You know, my heating oil, 60-odd p back in January, £1.40 now.
And this matters, doesn't it? I mean, matters.
I'm about to run out of heating oil, and I'm not buying any.
What are you going to do?
I'll just put another jumper on and tell my wife and kids to put another jumper on.
You couldn't make it up, could you? Because the bloody weather forecast is grim as well for the next few days.
Exactly.
Well. they've taken away spring as well. I don't think we can blame Donald Trump for that, but we could certainly try.
We'll give it a go.
We could give it a go. Ah, oh, jeez.
Don't get me wrong, right? I'm not claiming poverty. I'm not, right?
Sure.
I was in the Air Force for 22 years. I've got a military pension.
Is that why you stayed in East Anglia?
Yes.
I thought I was just trying to wonder about the accent there, but now I can make sense of that.
Yeah, Middlesbrough originally. So I'm not claiming poverty, but but I budget.
It's not fair. It's not fair. You didn't sign up for this. You didn't ask for this. You didn't agree to this. You didn't want this. And yet you're having to deal with this. And the people who wanted it, whether they're the people making the decisions or the clowns in this country, calling for more war, calling for more association with Donald Trump's depravity, they are going to be considerably more insulated from the impacts than you are. Key question, and I don't know if it's too early to answer this, that we almost always blame the government for the state of the economy. Now, you've mentioned Liz Truss. Sometimes it is the only person to blame is the government. The only people to blame are in the government.
I would almost disagree a little bit with that.
Go on.
Because who puts the government in? Who put her in charge? Well, it was the newspapers and it was the press, wasn't it?
Yes,
it
was. I mean, technically, it was the Conservative, the Conservative Party membership. But yeah, they were dancing very much to the tune being played by the Daily Mail and the Daily Telegraph and the rest of them. And some people in my line of work, let's not forget.
I think you can also go back to, there's the press, yes, but then there's the education system of people not being able to critically think anymore about what's the press actually writing and why they're writing it. What's their thinking behind that?
Well, a lot of them will be financially, if not insulated, then some of them might even be making money from it. Certainly, there's not much reason to buy a newspaper or to launch a television station in the current climate unless you're using it as an engine of influence to either indulge your own prejudices or to enlarge your own fortunes, which brings us to the decision by the Labour government to make a ban on cryptocurrency donations to political parties, which we'll have a little look at later in the programme. I hope you're right. I hope people do well. I mean, I hope on this occasion, because that earlier texter pointing out that the direction of traffic seemed to be improving, and now it is, even if the whole thing was called off today or tomorrow, it is likely to get worse before it gets better. Will we fall for the same engines of influence that John refers to? Same people that told you Brexit was going to be brilliant, austerity was a great idea, Liz Truss was a genius, and Boris Johnson was the best Prime Minister since Churchill. Will those columnists and those editors, those commentators, those radio presenters, will they triumph again by persuading you that the consequences of the war they wanted and Keir Starmer didn't are somehow Keir Starmer's fault? I do not know. But I'm not optimistic. Andy's in Knightsbridge. Andy, what made you pick up the phone?
Hi, James. How are you? Last time I spoke to you was quite a few years ago regarding the bond markets, and it was during during Liz Truss. I think it was after her budget. And
interesting. Interesting that these are the two moments that you've elected to get in touch. Go on, fill your boots.
Yeah, well, the thing I've noticed, and I've spent 30 years looking at patterns, the thing I've noticed is that whenever the bond markets start getting really high in terms of yields, politicians panic and they ease back. And I think one of the things you've seen over the last few weeks is the in America, the 30-year bond, which is what most mortgages and car loans are based upon, they've spiked quite substantially, close to around 5%, which is quite large, quite a large jump, relatively speaking. And whenever it gets close to 5%, that's when you'll see Trump ease back in some way with some kind of soothing comment. It's happened quite a few times, actually. I think I've noticed twice now when it pretty much touches 5%.
And do you move? Do you move money when that happens yourself?
Yeah, I normally do options. So I kind of start betting against bond yields going up when it starts approaching that kind of level. And it's okay. The same with WTI, which is oil. Whenever that gets to around 100, I'm talking about the American oil, WTI. Whenever it gets to around 100, you'll see Trump push back quite a bit to try and push the price down. As I say, it's happened twice now.
That's really interesting. And of course, I mean, I think on this occasion, the $500 million, and that's just the stuff we know about because, you know...
I have a theory about that.
Go on then.
I think personally, because Bessent was one of the top traders on Wall Street...
Don't libel anybody, Andy, because it's me they'll come for, not you.
Libeling him.
All right.
I'm saying that he directs the Treasury, and the Treasury, which is legally allowed to intervene in markets during times of stress... And I actually think maybe it was directed to the Treasury to initiate that purchase so that they could make money for America.
Would we ever know that? Would we ever be able to find... I mean, I'm trusting you on this because this is your profession and your field of expertise. I'm absolutely in the dark on what you're saying. But would we ever find out whether that theory was true?
Not unless they boast about it afterwards, which, you know, is possible they wouldn't be liable if they did because the Treasury is allowed to intervene in markets under stress.
We'll park that because it is, as you say, a sort of an unknown unknown. But in terms of that 15-minute window between $500 million being a bet, effectively, and Trump making an announcement absolutely stone-cold guaranteed to calm the markets, that the idea of that being a coincidence is something you can't even countenance.
Oh, absolutely not. No, I mean, someone, without a shadow of a doubt, had that kind of information early, without a doubt.
And that is, as I say, just the tip of the iceberg, because there's another $1.5 billion in futures contracts that was stopping hands and swapping hands, and a single bet placed on predicting the oil price worth about $192 million alone. It is not possible to tell who is behind the trades. A situation so serious that the White House has even issued a statement stating that it does not tolerate any administration official illegally profiteering off of insider knowledge. And any implication that officials are engaged in such activity without evidence is baseless and irresponsible reporting. Wow. Speaking of baseless and irresponsible reporting, you can't ever let go. You can't ever dial down your standards just because the people that you disagree with, and in some cases possibly the people whose politics you despise, have no standards at all. So if somebody, for example, suggests that we shouldn't obey the law or international law shouldn't be obeyed at times like this, you can't respond to that by, for example, calling for them to be victims of an illegal terror attack. It is just ridiculous to go down that road. And because of the importance of consistency, I want you to know, because quite a few of you are texting me about this, there is absolutely no evidence whatsoever that Barron Trump made a massive oil trade shortly before some of the big announcements made by his dad. Barron Trump is the youngest son of Donald Trump. And I've seen it in a lot of places, and it's coming in now from people whose history on my inbox suggests that they're not bonkers. So it's obviously getting quite a lot of traction. All you need to do is check. Find a decent fact-checking service on the internet. Have a proper look, and we will find that there is no evidence for it. 10:48 is the time. But there is absolutely evidence for the $500 million worth of bets placed on the oil market 15 minutes before President Trump announced that he would be postponing strikes on Iranian energy targets. And more on this, or rather more on that, after this.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
There is no world in which someone on £100 grand a year should ever expect to receive any help from the government. And I'll start the campaign now, as the government has decided that, yes, actually means testing benefits is a really good idea because we don't want to spend taxpayers' money on people who we deem to be too wealthy for this. I don't think there should be any form of universal benefit at all. I think all benefits should be means tested.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app. Here's a bright idea. Let Wix see how much you could save on your electricity bills. With Wix Solar, our team handles everything under the sun, from design to the perfect installation of your solar panels. We're proud as a peacock to be rated excellent on Trustpilot, so you can feel confident your solar installation is in safe hands. Book your free solar appointment today at wix.co.uk. Wix Solar, a name you can trust with service you can rely on.
Hi, I'm looking for a pair of jeans.
Right. Low slung, slouchy, wide leg, bower leg, curved leg, flared, straight or skinny.
Blue?
Fashion. It's hard to keep on top of. Other things, like the upcoming changes to renting, are a bit easier. If you are a landlord and you have existing tenants, you must send them a copy of the government's information sheet by the 31st of May, or risk a fine. Find out more at gov.uk/renting-is-changing.
Sorry to interrupt your day, but I've just been diagnosed with dementia, and I'm going to need your help. I'll need help when I can no longer button a shirt or recognise my own family. My daughter will need help too. I worry this could ruin her life. And we will all need help to find a cure to end the devastation of dementia. I can't do this alone.
It will take a society to beat dementia. Alzheimer's Society.
Spring has sprung. Buy any 6 bottles of wine and save 25% at Waitrose. Perhaps a citrusy Lemonette Agave. Perfect with halloumi, fresh off the BBQ. Or a Spree de Puisigan with notes of ripe red berry. And maybe go all out with a crisp bottle of Veuve Clicquot Champagne. Cheers to spring. Buy any 6 bottles of wine and fizz and save 25%. Waitrose, the home of food lovers.
Selected stores and lines, subject to availability, exclude Scotland box wines and bottles priced £6 or under, £100 or over.
Pain in my hip.
I keep feeling dizzy. I'm getting migraines more often.
There's another way to contact your GP practice, by simply sending your symptoms and requests through their website or the NHS app. We're delivering an NHS fit for the future. Tap it, type it, and we'll take care of it.
Julia, how do you spell vertebrae?
Oh, just type pain in the neck.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 60973.
10:52 is the time. The Insurance Journal, I'm sure I don't need to tell you what the speciality of the Insurance Journal is, has a headline this week in a story published indeed on March the 24th, yesterday. Thank you for sending it to me, Stuart. Gulf energy industry will take years to recover from Iran war, which prompts Stuart to text, I'm so depressed at the state we're in, I can't see a way out of this mess, certainly in my lifetime. Mortgages, food prices, most obviously fuel. And, you know, it's difficult, unless you're completely dishonest, to talk about this without acknowledging that it is all a direct consequence of thinking that Donald Trump would be anything other than catastrophic for the world, not just for the United States of America, but for the world. Stephanie writes, listening to James this morning, my heart is breaking for the harm being inflicted on people and the planet. Zebedee, I'm feeling very angry that I have to pay higher petrol and energy costs because of Benjamin Netanyahu's electoral campaign strategy to win power again and so keep himself out of court and or jail. First time texter, thank you for the kind words, but you write, thank you for being my inner voice of reason when this world becomes increasingly confusing. I'm a classic white van driver from the north of England. I'm supposed to be Mr. Farage's wet dream, apparently, but this cost of living crisis is going to get worse and worse until the ultra rich have made enough. I push back a bit on that, and then I look at the story about how much the ultra-rich are making. Because how rich do you have to be to place a $192 million bet on oil prices? moments before Donald Trump makes an announcement that sees oil prices temporarily plummet. Jess is in Manchester. Jess, what made you pick up the phone?
Hi, James. How are you?
Very well, Jess. What's on your mind?
Good, good. Well, I'm just sat here listening to you. I know you often lament not having women phone in. Well, I'm on maternity leave, so I'm actually able to listen to you live for once.
Welcome.
yeah, I guess from that perspective, really, I've got a 3-month-old son currently sleeping. And
Don't jinx it.
I know. Yeah, I know. That's why I'm rocking from side to side. When we were trying for him for 5 years. We had a very long fertility journey.
I've been there.
And when we turned 30, it was like, great, let's try for a baby. Mm. Then it was COVID, so we held off for a bit. And then, you know, as you know, all the world events that are happening around us have unfurled, including, you know, war in Europe and this, that and the other, and we've eventually welcomed him in January, and I'm just, you know, really grateful, but also looking at the state of the world and thinking, you know, what impact is that going to have on him? You know, what's it going to be like when he's a young man?
I mean, it's a while now since I was where you are. And I obviously don't mean Manchester. That's even longer ago. But does it change the way you think about things? Having a new arrival does somehow extend your scope. It makes you think about the bigger picture in ways that perhaps you wouldn't have done when it was just you and your partner.
I mean, yes and no. I've always been sort of quite politically engaged, in part thanks to your show over the years. Mm. But it certainly makes you fearful in a way that perhaps you weren't when it's just yourself that you're looking out for. I mean, on the financial side, we are incredibly privileged. You know, we were able to afford IVF.
I don't know about this. I've been thinking about this because I say that a lot as well. You've heard me say it. And obviously, yeah, Everything is relative. But I'm going to go out on a limb here, Jess, and I'm going to say that neither of us can afford to drop $192 million on a bet on the oil. So I don't know. If we're incredibly privileged, what the fudge are they?
Yes, well, exactly that. And I think, it's just not knowing what the world's going to be like. And I think, you know, you were asking some of your previous callers, you know, do voters turn around at the ballot box and lay this at Keir Starmer's door? And I can't see them not doing it. I think it's going to be like he's going to be the, you know, Gordon Brown of this crisis. You know, you're often talking about
Gordon Brown actually solved it and then paid the electoral price for the people caused by the people that brought the world to its knees.
Yeah.
Oh, I hope you're wrong. I really do. Are you seeing signs yet yourself? Are you noticing the ticking up of normal costs?
I mean, my husband did the shop this week, and he came back and said, you know, our son's breastfed, thankfully, but he was like, good God, the price of formula and, you know, the price of everything. Nappies, you know, everything's so expensive. And, you know, we are lucky enough to have an electric car, but, you know, you still have to plug that in. You know, electricity is still generated by fossil fuels at some point along the line. So you do start to feel these costs in spite of any kind of, you know, strategies you might have implemented to try and mitigate them, really.
This is the extraordinary thing about being ordinary. I mean, this is why I pick up on your point about privilege. That these are normal and ordinary aspirations and achievements and considerations, and they are all being put through the mangle effectively by world events. But it's not an earthquake has unfolded, or a volcano has erupted, or a tsunami has hit a continent. It is entirely the idiocy and the vanity of one man. That's the bit I still struggle with, and I guess that's why you tune in every day, so that we can struggle with it together. Jess, thank you. And, of course, take care. 10:58 is the time. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. And not much yet we're actually a nice mix on the big picture and the little picture. The little picture stuff is really interesting, and sometimes you may think that it isn't. And part of the reason why you may think that it isn't interesting is that I normally tell you that it isn't interesting. I'm like not really interested in very, very specific and personal experiences unless they resonate more widely. The point on a day like today is that they do resonate more widely. This is really interesting, for example, to me. And this is from Alan, who writes, I am not a rich man. I'm a media lecturer in my 40s. I have two young girls and a mortgage. My parents died 2 years ago, and I had a windfall from the sale of the family home. I'd never had savings before. I put it in ISAs, and then Rachel Reeves said we should be putting it in shares. So I tried it, and I made more in shares than in an ISA in 6 months. But I've lost all that profit in the last 2 weeks. Maybe I am naive, but in this day and age, why are we still killing each other to get what we want? I fear for the future for my two girls. And that seems to me to speak directly to the question I was trying to ask you an hour ago about the tectonic plates on which we all walk, sometimes shift beneath our feet without us properly noticing or noting. But I do believe that together, when we talk about these things, we can track their movements a little more effectively. And half of us are going to be tempted to look away, to not look up at the incoming difficulties, and half of us subscribe to the school of thought that says, you know, forewarned is forearmed.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 11 o'clock, two men have been arrested in connection with an arson attack on ambulances in North London. Four vehicles belonging to a Jewish community group were set alight in Golders Green in the early hours of Monday morning. LBC's reporter Fraser Knight is following developments.
The two men, aged 45 and 47, were taken into police custody this morning on suspicion of committing arson with intent to endanger life. But counter-terrorism police say while this appears to be a major breakthrough, their investigation isn't over because they're aware that CCTV footage seemed to suggest at least three people were involved in setting the fires.
Mediators in Pakistan say Iran has received a 15-point plan from the United States over reaching a potential ceasefire deal. Tehran has disputed Donald Trump's claims of diplomatic progress, saying that the president is negotiating with himself. The former Conservative MP Crispin Blunt has pleaded guilty to having crystal meth and cannabis. The former Justice Minister has also admitted four drug charges following a raid on his home in Surrey in 2023. This concerns the closure of London's only detox unit for homeless drug and alcohol addicts will put lives at risk. LBC has learnt the addiction clinical care suite at St Thomas's Hospital is due to close its doors next week. It's understood the decision was made due to funding cuts. The Health Secretary Wes Streeting has told us he will urgently look into the matter.
I've seen the worst of some of this. We can't write these people off. We can't just say it's all their fault. Quite the opposite. And we judge a society by how it treats its most vulnerable. So I've got to go and understand what's happened here. I'm not going to sit here as judge, jury and executioner on the decision, but it's my responsibility as Health Secretary to make sure we're providing the right care in the right place at the right time to people. So I'm going to go away and do that.
And figures released this morning show that inflation in the UK remained at 3% last month. It's in line with predictions, but doesn't take into account rises in petrol prices caused by the war in Iran. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 120 points at 10,084. The pound bought $1.34 and €1.15. LBC weather, a mix of sunny spells and patchy rain for large parts of the UK through Wednesday. Some wintry showers on northern hills with a high of 10 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
You know what you're getting with a conference. Laptop backpacks. Security pass lanyard.
If you could just pop this on.
Being asked, how was your journey in? An array of triangular sandwiches. Having to deal with a small crisis back at the office. Sometimes in life you just know what you're getting. Like a great night's sleep and a tasty breakfast. You know what you're getting with Premier Inn.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Three minutes after 11 is the time, and I'm in a right old pickle at the moment. So do you know what I was toying with the idea of talking about next? Argos has launched an influencer kit for toddlers. I don't know what your memory's like or your mind, but when we're in a moment like this, the same thing happened with Brexit, actually, and with COVID. I don't keep a diary, and I never really listen back to my own programmes, because that would be really weird. But I can't remember what things are like when things aren't like what they're like. Does that make sense? Does that, like, make sense? Like, I can't remember what things are like when things aren't like what they're like. So when there's not a war going on, right, we'd have loved that topic. In fact, I loved it so much at 9:45 this morning, I did it in the trail, the bit, the little clip that you hear towards the end of Nick's show. I talked about it because I'm thinking influencers. Is it a viable career option? Do we need to give our heads a wobble? And then I'm thinking, you can't talk about that when there are thousands of Marines making their way to the Middle East. And I'm thinking, yes, I can. We all need a little bit of light relief sometimes. But I can't. I can't do it. I don't know whether there's something wrong with me. But what are you... how are you supposed to have a conversation about, I don't know, parking tickets? Not that we ever would, but you take my point. It's a figure of speech. When you are in a moment of such extraordinary jeopardy. That's a great word, jeopardy. We're in a moment of such extraordinary jeopardy. And O'Brien is on the radio having a conversation about Argos launching an influencer kit aimed at toddlers. Comes with a toy phone, a tripod, a camera, a microphone. I can't do it. I can't do it. Can I? I don't know. No, I can't. So I'm gonna do the call to arms. I mean, one of the elements of all of this that I find increasingly fascinating, but some of the callers we've had over the last couple of weeks have been so good on this, I sometimes worry that they've closed down the debate. I'm thinking of Mike in Greenwich on Friday. So the approval rating for Donald Trump has now hit 36%, which is an extraordinary low. But you know how my brain works, right? My brain works in the opposite way to yours, because I immediately go, how the hell can he be as high as that? How can his approval rating be as high as the lowest it has ever been? 36% of the population or the electorate in the United States of America are watching what we are watching, and they are saying to themselves and presumably each other and definitely to pollsters, yeah, I'm going to do an accent. Be warned. Put your fingers in your ear. Yeah, man, I really like what I'm seeing. That's what they're saying. 36% of the population are watching what you're watching. A war that isn't a war. A negotiation that isn't a negotiation. A victory that is also a loss, and a demand for help from people that you don't need help from. And they're watching all of this. And they're saying to themselves and each other and everybody around them that this is great. This is wonderful. We need more of this. This is what we want. Even Dick Littlejohn in the Daily Mail's column this week. Well, do you know what it was about? Lockdowns during COVID. I mean, the man is never going to say, I'm a massive idiot and I can't believe I get paid for my political opinions, because yesterday I was telling you that I've never been more ashamed to be British than I was when Keir Starmer decided not to join an illegal war in the Middle East. Or, I can't believe I still get paid for my opinions after telling you a month ago that I thought that Donald Trump would be a better leader of this country than Keir Starmer. So these people are incapable of apology or shame, but the closest they'll ever get is writing a column about COVID lockdowns in the middle of a war in the Middle East, and presumably still getting paid for it. I could only read the first couple of paragraphs of it because I was in danger of collapsing in sort of a form of hysteria. But imagine having a job that involves commenting on the most important issues of the moment and writing a column about something that happened half a decade ago. And it wasn't even interesting or good. So that's what is happening now. 36% approval rating is either fingers in ears, eyes closed, making it up as you go along. I was trying to sound like Roscoe P. Coltrane when I did that accent. It's sort of niche reference in terms of popular culture. So I'm going to add to the question that we're asking, and remember, Mike in Greenwich pointed out that a lot of it has to do with the rejection of intellectualism, but how can Trump's approval rating still be at 36%? It's not the question everyone else will ask, which is, how have Trump's approval ratings fallen so low? Which is probably easier to answer. I never stop making rods for my own back. How the hell can they still be so high? 0345 6060 973. And of course, I'm still asking you the twin questions regarding the personal impact of what is going on. And I'd like to move into the emotional on this as well, not just the financial or the economic or the social, but the emotional. What do you do? Do you look away? Do you try to process? Do you try to make sense of it? So 36% of American voters still approve of Donald Trump. I just want you to tell me why. 0345 60 60 973. Because I'm going to give you a little more evidence. And I suppose part of the answer is going to have to be that they don't know what is going on. And we do, because we can hear things like this.
Well, I think we're going to end it. I can't tell you for sure. You know, I don't like to say this. We've won this. This war has been won. The only one that likes to keep it going is the fake news. I mean, the New York Times, you read the New York Times, it's like we're not winning a war where they have no Navy and they have no Air Force and they have no nothing. And we literally have planes flying over Tehran and other parts of their country. They can't do a thing about it.
So why are you still there then, champ? And why are you sending more troops there? Why are you asking for help? Why are you attacking NATO for not doing enough to help? Why are you threatening them with more war that's over? Why are you threatening them with more war when there is no war, because the war is already won? And listen to the fake news claim there. And that is just off the charts. But 36% of Americans still like it. Do you remember the joint plan of action that was signed by Barack Obama and the Iranian leaders with regards to their nuclear capabilities, the joint comprehensive plan of action? Do you know how many pages it was? 109 pages with five annexes. And, of course, it saw an extraordinary reduction in the number of, and you might need a, I don't know, a guide to this, the first-generation centrifuges, a massive reduction from 1,008 to zero in advanced centrifuges. There would be constraints on centrifuge research and development for the first time in history. The stockpile of low-enriched uranium would be reduced from 7,154 kilograms to 300 kilograms. And crucially, if you care about nuclear bombs, the stockpile of medium-enriched uranium would be reduced from 196 kilograms to 0 kilograms. This was negotiated by Barack Obama, or by his representatives, and the participants in the process involved the Foreign Minister of China, the Foreign Minister of France, the Minister of Foreign Affairs from Germany, the European Union's High Representative. The British Foreign Secretary was Philip Hammond. John Kerry was the United States Secretary of State. Sergei Lavrov, the Russian Foreign Minister, was there, and so was Mohammad Javad Zarif, the Minister of Foreign Affairs in Iran. And it worked. And they signed it, and it was all going brilliantly, and Donald Trump set fire to it when he became president. Which makes this comment from him yesterday all the more insane.
They're talking to us, and they're talking sense. And remember, it all starts with they cannot have a nuclear weapon. Just, you know, I said yesterday, what are the top 10? I said, well, number 1, 2, and 3 is they can't have a nuclear weapon. And they're not going to have a nuclear weapon. And we're talking about that. And I don't want to say in advance, but they've agreed they will never have a nuclear weapon. They've agreed to that.
I thought they had one. I thought that's why they had to go to war. Or was that 9 months ago? Or was that 3 weeks ago? Or is that next time, next year? I don't know. But I do know this. In April 2017, the US certified that Iran was complying with the deal that Barack Obama had negotiated and signed. In July 2017, the US certified that Iran was complying with the deal that Barack Obama had negotiated and signed. So that's April, everything's going well. July, everything's going well. October, President Trump announced that he would not make the certification required for reasons that he never really specified. And now he's back to, and he'll do it, he'll sign something that's not quite as good as what Obama did and claim that it is an extraordinary victory. Are you ready for an update on regime change? Are you ready for an update on regime change? What does regime change look like?
We killed all their leadership, and then they met to choose new leaders, and we killed all of them. And now we have a new group, and we can easily do that, but let's see how they turn out. We have really regime change. You know, this is a change in the regime, because the leaders are all very different than the ones that we started off with that created all those problems. So this was, I think we can say, Jason, this is regime change, right?
Currently believed to be his son, right? Meet the new guy. Literally the same as the old, well, 50% of the same DNA as the old guy, let alone the same politics, although arguably he's even more hardline and extreme. So, I mean, what do you reckon? If you piped this into every home in America, would the 36% figure fall? 36% approval rating. For I'm going to play it again. I love it when the clips come together. To paraphrase, I know you said Hannibal Lecter then. I'm thinking of Hannibal Smith, right? Which is not allowed to smoke cigars in the studio. So have another listen to this and watch that 36% approval rating. And just tell me what it does.
We killed all their leadership. And then they met to choose new leaders, and we killed all of them. And now we have a new group, and we can easily do that. But
meet the new
let's
group.
See how they turn out. We have really regime change. You know, this is a change in the regime because the leaders are all very different than the ones that we started off with that created all those problems. So this was, I think we can say, Jason, this is regime change, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's regime change. It's the same people. It's his son. It's regime change. And it's the ones that started that caused all those problems. What problems? If you ask him now, if you pushed him on that, and you won't be allowed to because they'd chase you out of the Oval Office like a rat up a drain pipe. But if you said, what problems? Because the problems that you described as the original reason for going to war, you described as having been completely destroyed and obliterated 9 months ago. So what problems are you talking about? And anyway, listen, while we're talking about negotiations and the importance of negotiations, let's see what the Secretary for War has to say about these very delicate and important negotiations with extremely important people who definitely exist but go to a different school.
The air campaign that we've conducted, that Israel's conducted alongside us, was one for the history books, truly. And it's because we have a president of the United States that when he sends his warfighters out to fight, he unties their hands to actually go out and close with and destroy the enemy as viciously as possible from moment one. And that's why we see ourselves as part of this negotiation as well. We negotiate with bombs. You have a choice as we loiter over the top of Tehran, as the president talked about your future. The president has made it clear that you will not have a nuclear weapon. The War Department agrees. Our job is to ensure that. And so we're keeping our hand on that throttle as long as it's hard as is necessary to ensure the interests of the United States of America are achieved on that battlefield.
So they've already won, but they haven't achieved their interests, and they're keeping that man's mad, right? I mean, we talk a lot about Donald Trump being a deranged liar. I don't know that I've got the vocabulary. To paraphrase the late, great Peter Cook, I never had the Latin. I could have been a high court judge, but I never had the Latin. I mean, he is absolutely bonkers. And again, it's only when I come to work and I start talking to you about it that this stuff properly registers, because the rest of the time I'm busy. I've got tennis to play. I've got video games to finish. I come to work, I have to stare at it like this, and I go, oh my holy moly, he's in charge of everything. He's the man, he's the Secretary of State for War. He's as mad as a box of frogs. Have another listen to that, but close your eyes, not if you're driving, that would be crazy. Have another listen to Hegseth, for it is he. And just see how bulbous his eyes are in your mind. So listen to this man talking, and focus in your imagination on how much his eyes are bulging when he talks.
The air campaign that we've conducted, that Israel's conducted alongside us, was one for the history books, truly. And it's because we have a president of the United States that when he sends his warfighters out to fight, he unties their hands to actually go out and close with and destroy the enemy as viciously as possible from moment one. And that's why we see ourselves as part of this negotiation as well. We negotiate with bombs.
Oh, my God.
You have a choice as we loiter
it's
over the top
the opposite
of Tehran,
of bombs
as the president
is negotiating.
About your future. The president has made it clear that you will not have a nuclear weapon.
36%.
The War Department agrees. Our job is to ensure that. And so we're keeping our hand
he's
on that.
What? He's made this guy in charge.
As long as it's hard as is necessary to ensure
36%.
The interests of the United States of America are achieved on that battlefield.
I wonder what's happened to little J.D. Vance. Has anyone caught up with him recently?
I know you said there's a bunch of people from the administration who are negotiating with Iran. There's been reports that the vice president is leading those negotiations. Is that true?
Well, he's involved in them. J.D. is involved, and Marco's involved, and Jared Kushner's involved, very smart guy, and Steve Witkoff, smart guy, is involved. And I'm involved. I'm involved. Why? I'm going to be so big. Oh, I don't want to talk about it. I'm the president of the United States, Tom, and I'm not going to talk about it. It's beneath me to talk about saving millions of lives.
Sorry? What? Pardon? I'll go on once more with Fig. Because remember when Joe Biden, lost his thread occasionally, and it was the end of the world as we know it? couldn't talk about anything else on both sides of the Atlantic. Scale of 1 to 10, how sane does this man sound?
I know you said there's a bunch of people from the administration who are negotiating with Iran. There's been reports that the vice president is leading those negotiations. Is that true?
Well, he's involved in them. J.D. is involved, and Marco is involved, and Jared Kushner is involved, very smart guy, and Steve Witkoff, smart guy, is involved.
Here it comes.
And I'm involved. I'm involved. Why? Well, I'm
like
going to be so big. Oh, I don't want to talk about it. The president of the United States, Tom. I'm not going to talk about it. It's beneath me to talk about saving millions of lives.
Oh, it's 11:19.
LBC.
This time last year, Hassan was working in sales and spent his evenings gaming. Now, he's working as a prison officer.
You know what's going to happen, it's not worth it. Let's just go in there.
He's tackled cell fires, got through to some of the most challenging prisoners, and helped support their rehabilitation. He's done things he once thought he was never capable of. But he still loves his gaming. An extraordinary job, done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
The famous five are on the train to Cardiff, planning their Welsh adventure. Did you know Wales is absolutely bursting with myths and legends, says Anne? And number one on my list is the legend of the Red Dragon. Then tomorrow we'll look for the legendary fairies of Pennold Castle, adds Dick. But first, let's try the legendary Welsh cakes, quips George. Yes, let's start there, laughs Anne. Great Western Railway. Legendary adventures start here.
This was made with human intelligence.
And artificial intelligence.
Just like Intuit QuickBooks business management software. If you're a sole trader earning over 50K from April 2026, making tax digital means...
you have to file your taxes online.
But new QuickBooks AI has...
automated tools to help make compliance easier.
I was going to say that. Outdo it with Intuit QuickBooks.
Plus.
James O'Brien. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
It's 20 minutes after 11. Someone else can talk for a while. Mark's in Brighton. Mark Riley, lifelong observer of US politics, who has, I suspect, in retrospect, very wisely relocated to these shores in recent years. Mark, what's going on?
How you doing, James?
I'm all good.
Well, look, here's what's going on, and it's very simple. You're listening to the ravings of a draft-dodging convicted criminal. That's what you're hearing. His people don't want them. His people don't believe any of that. You ask them about the criminal convictions, 34 in all, and what do they say? Well, it happened in New York. And everybody knows how liberal New York is. That's nonsense. It's utter garbage. But be that as it may, this is a guy who insulted a draft dodger, who insulted a war hero in Robert Mueller.
Well, not for the first. He insulted John McCain as well.
He insulted
all of them, didn't he? When he said they were all sort of losers and he didn't want to go to the cemetery in France because he was going to mess up his ludicrous hair.
And not only that, he references Pearl Harbor in front of the Japanese prime minister.
Right, and that was a moment, Mark, because I got to about 12:30 the morning, the day after that happened, before I even mentioned it. That's how mad things are now. The United States president makes a hideous, crass, quotes, joke, end quotes, about Pearl Harbor in the presence of the Japanese prime minister. And there was so much else going on that I didn't get around to it for 2.5 hours. It would have been the only story in town if any other president at any other point in American history, obviously post-Pearl Harbor, had done it.
And that's what convicted criminals do. They deflect. They dodge. They talk about something else. And by the way, that $500 million, somebody will find out who made that money.
Will they find out?
Yes, we got good journalists in America. They will find out. They'll go, they'll talk to different people at banks, some teller somewhere who actually deposited the money. They'll find out. Find out the corporations and the names of the people who made that money in old parlance, selling short.
They'll find out the people who did it on the traditional markets. They're never going to get close to the people who've done it in the kind of dark markets, are they, with cryptocurrency and Bitcoin and the rest of it?
They can find out.
Maybe.
Believe me, they can find out.
Well, we'll come
but
back to
there's
that.
There's something else that people are sleeping here. A couple of things.
Go on.
One, it's not just oil that's being blocked through the Strait of Hormuz. It's fertilizer.
Yeah.
And who depends on fertilizer?
Farmers.
American farmers. and British farmers and farmers all over the world. And as that fertilizer does not reach its intended destination, prices of farm goods skyrocket. And that's what you're going to see. And it's going to be, see, because I shop for my family.
Okay,
right? I go to the store. I see in shopping here, when I first got here, a box of facial tissue was 75 pence. It's now a pound 10. Now,
everything,
that's going to start rising incrementally because people don't have access to what they need to produce the food that the world eats. It's as simple as that. Now, that might well have happened. And by the way, there are certain countries that are getting through the Straits of Hormuz. Won't tell you this. But there are certain countries that are being navigated through the strait. So they miss the mines. They don't get hit by the warship. They don't get hit by anything. They get through.
Powers, and you're right. There's a letter that's been circulated among IMO members on Tuesday. So yesterday, if you're not across this, that's the International Maritime Organization, essentially explaining from Iran's foreign ministry that Tehran had taken necessary and proportionate measures to prevent the aggressors and their supporters from exploiting the Strait of Hormuz to advance hostile operations against Iran, but that non-hostile vessels can transit the Strait of Hormuz, I quote, in coordination with Iranian authorities, which is what Ash explained to us on Monday, involves Iranian boats essentially leading these vessels through the waters because they're the ones that know where the mines are.
And take a wild guess what currency those non-hostile governments are using.
I don't know.
It's not the U.S. dollar.
Right, anymore. No, okay. I understand the point that you make.
Yeah, there's something to go to the Chinese yuan, and they're starting with the BRICS nations. They're the ones that are starting this. And there, I believe, is a cause and effect between countries that start to use the yuan and move away from the U.S. dollar and the ability of those same countries to get through the Straits of Hormuz. What do you bet?
Gosh. Well, I mean, I've given up predicting or indeed using... I mean, you can use the powers of reason to analyse what everybody else is likely to do next. You just can't use them anymore to analyse what the President of the United States is likely to do next. Okay, so I've got a riddle for you, given as you have laid a few questions upon me. How many ships, Mark, do you think, or indeed you might know, are currently stuck in the Gulf, unwilling to risk the Strait?
I've heard they're well over 1,000, and none of them will move because they can't get insurance.
3,200.
That many?
3,200 ships.
I didn't realize it was that many.
Stuck in the Gulf.
Stuck in the Gulf, and they won't move unless the Iranians let them move, and there is absolutely nothing that convicted criminal Donald Trump can do about it.
So talk to me about the 36%. I know you began there with the observation that he might have broken the law, but he didn't really break the law, or he might have boasted about sexually assaulting women, but he didn't really. It was just locker room talk, or he might have sued a woman for libel after she accused him of rape, but somehow the fact that he lost that case doesn't mean that he has anything to answer for. What I mean, give me something new. 36%, watching what we're watching, listening to what we're listening to, and concluding that they love this stuff.
That 36% cannot reconcile objective reality with what they've been taught to believe. Uh-huh. It is as simple as that. These are people who have put their entire stock in Donald Trump. And not only in Donald Trump, but in his enablers. The Peter Thiels, the guy that's from Oracle is getting ready to buy CNN. All of these different people. And they're the ones with the money. And they're the ones that are eventually to control public opinion. CBS just eliminated their entire radio division.
God forbid. Now, that's serious. I mean, I can cope with most things, but getting rid of radio presenters, Mark, that's a bit too close for home for both of us.
Absolutely. I take that personally because I know people that used to work at CBS Radio. So it's like all of these things are happening. But the big thing that people are going to start realizing very soon is that as countries move away from using the U.S. dollar as the central world mode of trade, That's going to impact everybody, and it could well mean the end of the American empire.
Will people around him, are they part of the problem that you described?
Of course they're part of the problem.
No, I mean your kind of Vances, because I was talking to Scaramucci about this a couple of weeks ago, and he's very interesting as well, like you, on this question of whether or not they are looking at him with disgust, but ambition has overcome their disgust, or whether or not they are part of the process that the average punter has gone through, which is being so allied with the madness that they can't break out of the spell. And obviously it's not going to apply to all of them, but I look at Vance and I look at his history, and I can't help thinking that he can see what's going on as clearly as you can, but he has just made a calculation that self-advancement and possibly even the presidency are at the end of this hideous tunnel if he can just stay stapled to Donald Trump while they go down it together.
Look, here's the problem, James, and people don't realize this. All of these people are desirous of access to power, and Trump at this point has the problem. Let me tell you something. Many years ago, I went to a White House picnic. How I got invited, I do not know to this day. All right. But I got invited to this White House picnic, and I'm looking around at all the people who are there, journalists, opinion makers, the whole nine. And it suddenly dawned on me that people, because it was Bill Clinton's presidency.
Yeah.
And I realized that people who in print and on television and in radio hated his guts were still there at that picnic. And I'm trying to say to myself, what the hell are they doing here?
Yeah.
They want access to power. And the people who are funding him want their phone calls returned. That's how Washington, anyway, that's how it works.
And today we add to that the possibility that they were alerted, some of them, to the imminent announcement on Monday, and therefore part of the $500 million. How do you react to that as a veteran? Someone who has covered, I shouldn't call you a veteran, that's very rude. Someone who has covered American issues, American society, American politics for decades. How do you react to this specific story? $500 million in bets on the oil market placed 15 minutes before the president announced, made an announcement absolutely guaranteed to send oil prices down.
Well, you know what? Paul Krugman wrote a column about this yesterday, and he called it treason.
Good Lord.
I'm not sure he's all that far from it, but it's very simple, and I've said this to you before, James.
Yeah.
All they want is all there is. That's it.
Oh, man, that resonates. Thank you, Mark. All they want is all there is. And that is such a parallel to the line I often share with you about enough being enough. When is enough enough? And look at a Musk or a Thiel or a Trump, and that will never be enough. Or a Kushner. It will never be enough. Enough will never be enough. All they want is all there is. And the tragedy for the world is that if they ever get it, they will still be who they are. They will still be who they're desperate not to be. They will still be who they think they won't be when they have got all that there is. Or when they have got what they hoped would be enough, it won't be enough, and they will still be Donald Trump. They will still be Jared Kushner. They will still be the person that they're desperate not to be. There's Dominic Ellis with your headlines.
Two men have been arrested in connection with an arson attack on ambulances belonging to a Jewish community charity. Four vehicles were set alight in Golders Green in North London in the early hours of Monday. Mediators in Pakistan say Iran has received a 15-point plan from the US over reaching a potential ceasefire deal. Tehran has mocked Mr. Trump's claims of peace talks, suggesting he's negotiating with himself. And the former Conservative Justice Secretary Crispin Blunt has pleaded guilty to possessing illegal drugs, including crystal meth. The 65-year-old has admitted four drugs charges, which relate to a police raid on his home in Surrey in 2023. LBC weather, a mix of sunny spells and patchy rain for large parts of the UK. Some wintry showers on northern hills, a high of 10 degrees.
This is LBC.
At Lloyds, we love that moment a dream becomes a reality. Like for Steve, he's slowly packing his belongings into a small box. A framed photo of his grandchildren, a pot plant that could do with some water, a mug that reads, "Happy retirement, Steve." As he waits for the lift one last time, he feels lighter, happier. At Lloyds, we've been asking the nation about their dreams. That's how we know Steve's story and thousands of others just like it. We've been backing the nation's aspirations for 250 years. So when it's time to realise your dreams, we're ready when you are. Bank on Lloyds.
This is 40-year-old Kathy, mother of two and self-confessed telly addict.
Oh, look at you. That's brilliant. Well done.
This is also Kathy, working as part of a team to keep things calm at her local prison.
Listen, speak to me.
And helping someone's son write his first letter home in 8 months.
Well done. You should be really proud.
Thank you, miss.
An extraordinary job done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
Young people today, can they really handle responsibility? Or are we just kidding ourselves?
Welcome to McDonald's.
And a mayo chicken.
Some think young people can't manage. We disagree. That's why one in three McDonald's managers are under 25.
Hey, Kira.
Hey, Dad. How are you?
Right? Yeah, I'm good. It's busy out there, though.
Like Kira from South London. She's 23 and manages a team of 20.
Let's go.
Leadership. Making it happen at McDonald's.
This was made with human intelligence.
And artificial intelligence.
Just like Intuit QuickBooks business management software. If you're a sole trader earning over 50K from April 2026, making tax digital means...
you have to file your taxes online.
But new QuickBooks AI has...
automated tools to help make compliance easier.
I was going to say that. I'll do it with Intuit QuickBooks.
Jing.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
It's 25 to 12. PMQ's on the way at 12. It'll be fascinating to hear what Kemi Badenoch does this week. Last week was quite unsatisfying because she didn't mention the war. Have we got the John Cleese clip ready, Keith? Can we dig that one out of the archive? It started off quite funny, that. But it certainly wasn't funny by this time last week when the leader of His Majesty's opposition couldn't mention the single most important event in the world because she had called every single aspect of it wrong. So she asked a bunch of other questions, which Keir Starmer, to his negativity, didn't answer. So it was an almost uniquely unsatisfying PMQs. And it was not entirely Kemi Badenoch's fault, because Keir Starmer could have addressed some of the questions that she asked more directly, but chose not to. But the fact that she's asking questions when the country is embroiled in this almighty and epochal mess caused by Donald Trump and Benjamin Netanyahu, and she couldn't mention it at all because she has managed somehow to defy every political tradition in this country by not siding with the government at a time of epic international peril, and getting everything so spectacularly wrong that she took the view, probably correctly, that the wisest course to follow would be not to mention the war. A position so ridiculous that the comedy writers of the past had provided us with clips galore.
Don't mention the war.
Thank you, John. I don't know. Will she mention the war? Should we take bets on it? Will she mention the war this week, or will she ask him questions about the price of peas in Grimsby? I do not know. But I do know that she will almost certainly pretend or lie or not understand. And with Kemi Badenoch, it's impossible. It's absolutely impossible to work out whether she's pretending not to understand something, whether she is deliberately lying about something, or whether she genuinely doesn't understand something. So when she tries to claim that the cost of fuel or the cost of living or any of the direct consequences of the war that she was massively in favour of and thought that we should be up to our ears in, when all of those consequences come home to roost, she will try to blame it on Keir Starmer, who had the wit and the wisdom on this occasion to actually see the madness unfolding before him. Madness that has come to irrefutable fruition in the course of just 3 short weeks. So that's on the way at 12. 11:37 is the time. Back to the, as a triple question now, but the one that I think interests me most is the 36% approval rating. Everywhere else, and this isn't one of those occasions where I'm obliquely boasting about how amazing we are, this is how journalism should work. You do report the approval rating dipping to 36% as if that is bad news for Donald Trump because it's so low. I, however, respond to this news with absolute shock that it's so high. But James, it's the lowest it's ever been. I still can't believe how high it is. The overall approval rating is at 36%, the lowest point since he took office last year. I think I'd still be surprised if it was at 6%. I'd still be sitting here going, well, look, you've got J.D. Vance and his family. You've got Trump and his family. You've got the billionaires and their immediate family. But how the hell can his approval rating be as high as 6%? I can't quite get my head around it. But it's at 36%, which obviously means that it's six times harder to get your head around than it would be if it was at 6%. This is according to a Reuters poll released yesterday. And it's falling. 25% of respondents approve of the way Trump is handling the cost of living in the US. Again, spectacularly and historically low. To me, stunningly high. And I guess we come once again to the question of how can that be? How can it be at 36%? Racism, the misogyny, the climate change denial, all of that is part of the piece. But I can't believe 36% of people are sufficiently, can I use the word stupid? Not to see and hear what you and I can see and hear. And of course, you can't see and hear all of it. Mark in Brighton, who pays incredibly close attention to these matters, was taken by surprise when I told him that 3,200 ships are currently stuck in the Gulf, unwilling to risk the Strait of Hormuz because they are associated with hostile states. Non-hostile vessels, Iran told the International Maritime Organization yesterday, can transit straight through the Strait of Hormuz with an Iranian escort. And he told me something that I didn't know, which was Paul Krugman, a former Nobel Prize winner for economics, so he knows what he's talking about, writing yesterday, we have another word for situations in which people with access to confidential information regarding national security, such as plans to bomb or not to bomb another country, exploit that information for profit. This is what he wrote on his own Substack profile post yesterday, concluding that word is treason. Treason. Nobel Prize winning economist. That's in the red corner, in the blue corner. 36% approval rating. Riddle me that. Steve's in Orlando. Steve, what made you pick up the phone?
Hi, James.
Hello.
Well, first and foremost, thanks for being on the radio.
Well,
you make my mornings. I get up early just to listen to you.
You're very kind. Thank you. How early?
About 4 a.m.
Bloody hell, mate. That is a compliment. Thank you very much indeed.
It's not entirely down to you. I don't sleep
don't
too
spoil
well.
It. Don't spoil it. Don't spoil it. Dog knees yeah, walking. Okay. Carry on.
All right. You've raised a few things this morning. I mean, the 36% of the populace that are pro the Orange Oracle basically are reinforcing their own belief system. All they're doing is they're living in a bubble. They're watching the same news programs over and over again, from the likes of Fox and Newsmax.
And what are they telling them? What are they telling them about this war?
Because they're telling them it's all good news that we're winning it. And
but Trump's saying they've already won it. So why are they still reporting on it? I mean, do they not?
Honest,
do they manage?
I watch it about once a week to reflect on
maybe
what's
we
going
need to
on,
watch it all the time.
Yeah, I really don't want to watch.
No,
it
No, I know
all
you
time.
Don't want to watch it all the time. It's a bit
that
like what
so
they did
depressing.
Over at the New World newspaper. They watched GB News for about a week, and goodness me, some of them are still in therapy, I think, as a consequence of that. But if you do watch it all the time, you end up understanding how people can believe that up is down, freedom is slavery, ignorance is strength.
Yeah, but I mean, the group of people who are friends of mine, I mean, I got here and I was pretty much a right-leaning Republican, I guess.
Sure.
And over the last 27 years, I think I've been here, I've drifted more and more to the left as I've seen their denial of things. And also the sort of polarization of both Congress and the Senate and the populace.
Yes.
I mean, everybody, it is so difficult to discuss. If I go to the bar or go for dinner with friends and they're Republicans, and you raise something that he's done that's astonishing, they'll say, oh, yes, but, and they'll come up with an excuse or they'll change the subject.
Because they are putting so much effort into remaining allied to this project.
And it reinforces. It reinforces their belief system.
What is their belief system? Because I sometimes worry that when I say the only thing they get in return is an endorsement of, their racism, their misogyny, or their climate change denial. That that is a bit simplistic, a bit crass, a bit unfair. To be a right-leaning Republican 20 years ago did not mean that. It could have been all sorts of other things.
And the majority of my friends probably don't believe that.
But they're still on board, so what are they getting then?
They're on board economically.
They're not, though, are they, really, deep down?
Well, no, they're not really, but they believe they are, and they
What is the engine of delusion here? Because I know they're your friends, and I don't know them, but I don't quite understand what drug is so powerful that it can cause them to pretend or persuade themselves that they are...
What's the alternative? The alternative is to accept what's actually going on and realise that they're in deep... You know what?
Yeah. So these are the people.
Denial.
So I've got two groups now of Trump voters, and I'll give you the benefit and them the benefit of the doubt in group one, which is I voted for him, and literally Emily Maitlis told me this about 6 months out from the last election, and she said it's all about the price of gas, and I never doubt Emily. She speaks ex cathedra like the Pope. It is coming direct from heaven when Emily opens her mouth, and I never, ever challenge anything that she says. But on that single one occasion, I just thought, are you sure? I mean, she was there talking to people, so and she was obviously right. People had been persuaded that if they voted for Donald Trump, the price of gas would come down. And those same people are now watching 3,200 ships get stuck in the Strait of Hormuz. The price of gas is going up. They're not going to be as directly affected by things as other countries that don't produce their own oil are going to be. But that, so they can now let go. Right, that's why the numbers are coming down. They can let go of it. But the people who can't let go, even though all of the economic arguments have fallen apart, I'm not as nice as you. I think it's got to come down to shared bigotries. I can't see what else fits the pattern.
I just don't see any evidence of the bigotry.
Well, not in front of you, Steve.
No. Certainly not, because I'm the only sane person in the room.
But that's
James.
Why. As soon as you leave the room, they all start, you know, talking about grabbing women by the genitals and talking about Barack Hussein Obama and indulge. As soon as Steve leaves the room, they probably, you know, take their masks off and go full Trump. Yeah. I don't know.
Possibly.
What else is there? It's a strange
one.
You're going to stay. You're going to stay there. You like it. But is it changing for you, the country?
I'm coming up to retirement. Not sure whether I'm going to stay here, to be honest. I might come back to the UK. It's not the same country. It's not the country that I became a citizen of and followed the Constitution. The Constitution's being torn to shreds.
Yes, it has.
You know, a written Constitution that, you know, it's just astonishing that we're...
ticking them off one by one as they disappear over the horizon, up to and including Paul Krugman, I mean, an almost universally admired economist. Describing it as treason, what happened on Monday.
Yeah.
Treason.
You've also got a situation where Congress and the Senate are toothless now. I mean, they can't agree anything, so he's just overridden them and made executive decisions on everything and just pushed them all through. And it'll take 4 or 5 years to get through courts to overturn them, so the Democrats are doing nothing. They're just sitting there thinking, okay, well, we'll just wait for the next election. The midterms.
Yeah, and well, they haven't even got much of a plan for that at the moment either. And how much of that is symptom and how much of that is cause, I do not know. But I'm glad you were listening today, Steve. I'm glad you got up early. Thank you for that. And do stay safe, eh? And I don't want to insult your friends. Of course I don't. But I need more. I need to know what it is. So we got friends in the United States. Well, my mum's got friends in the United States of America. They're kind of fallen out because they were massive Trump fans. And mum was just sort of asking the kind of questions that we ask every day on the program. What exactly is it that you're cross about? Or what exactly is it that you're looking forward to? Or what exactly is it that he offers you that other politicians don't? And of course, when people realize that they can't answer those questions, this is why Brexit caused a lot of fractures and frictions in families, because someone would say to the Brexit supporting member of the family, what law is it you're looking forward to not having to obey? Or why? And of course, they wouldn't ever say, I just hate foreigners, son. I just want to get rid of all the immigrants. And that is why they got so cross with the people who were asking them questions, because a question is a mirror quite often. A question about your beliefs is a mirror. So why do you believe that thing that you believe? What's your evidence for it? I haven't got any evidence because I don't really believe it. I just hate all the foreigners. And that's how I make sense of Trump supporters now, that 36% figure. They love the racism. They love the misogyny. And they love the climate change denial, which is the weirdest one, because they're not going to make any money out of the climate change denial. The people making all the money out of the climate change denial are the people who've already got all the money. The kind of people who've got $192 million to spare to place a bet based on illegally obtained information, perhaps, regarding an announcement that the President of the United States is about to make. They will benefit from climate change denial because they benefit from fossil fuel extraction and can't bear the thought of that particular money source being turned off, because even though they're filthy rich, to go back to Mark in Brighton, they want all that there is. All that they want is all that there is. It's never, ever enough. But why would Joe Schmo on Main Street USA be signing up to climate change denial? Why would callers to other shows on LBC be convinced that there's no such thing as man-made climate change? Well, how have that? Well, the answer's easy, isn't it? Have a look at the media, have a look at the think tanks, have a look at all of the engines of influence that told you Brexit was a brilliant idea, Boris Johnson was a genius, Liz Truss was an economic savant, and that austerity was a necessary response to a global international financial crisis. Because all of those people, every single one of them, will tell you that climate change is a hoax, or climate change is exaggerated, or that net zero is not good. Every single one of them. And that is where we come every single day to the list of things that they have been spectacularly, horribly, treacherously wrong about, and the extraordinary fact that the next thing that they're treacherously wrong about will probably work as well.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Health Secretary Wes Streeting, who joins me now. It is reported today that you are going to make it easier to dismiss racist or anti-Semitic doctors accused of those crimes. How will that work in practice, Secretary of State?
It's not just about anti-Semitism. This applies to racism more generally, but we've had a particular problem online with anti-Semitism. I've got Jewish people in my own community. They don't want to tell people that they're Jewish because they're frightened that they might get treated differently by our National Health Service at a time of great vulnerability. I have not known a level of fear and anxiety among Britain's Jews in the way that we see today, and people questioning whether Britain is a safe place to be Jewish.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast, back tomorrow morning from 7. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
My name is Kathleen, and this is my NHS story. Having a persistent cough is quite socially embarrassing, so I went to see a respiratory nurse who sent me off for an X-ray at my local CDC, and they were offering Sunday appointments and evening appointments, which was great.
The government is opening new community diagnostic centres, with many already available 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, so the NHS can be there for all of us when we need it. Find your closest one at gov.uk/NHS Fit for the Future. Available England-wide.
Wellness. What even is wellness? Cleanses, routines, regimes, biohacks, stacks, schedules, procedures, programs. I suppose so. But can it just be a cup of... Pukka Herbal Tea. Ah, Pukka. Nothing beats nature.
If you owned a diesel Nissan, Renault, Jaguar or Land Rover built between 2009 and 2020, you could be entitled to compensation. Checking takes minutes at jointheclaim.com, and if successful, compensation could be worth thousands. Don't miss out. You could be among the millions of drivers across the UK bringing diesel emissions claims. Check now at jointheclaim.com.
Join the claim!
Eligibility criteria apply and any compensation may vary.
Spring has sprung. Buy any 6 bottles of wine and save 25% at Waitrose. Perhaps a citrusy Lemonetta Gavi, perfect with halloumi, fresh off the BBQ. Or a Spree de Puisigan with notes of ripe red berry. And maybe go all out with a crisp bottle of Veuve Clicquot champagne. Cheers to spring. Buy any 6 bottles of wine and fizz and save 25%. Waitrose, the home of food lovers.
Selected stores online, subject to availability, excludes Scotland box wines and bottles price £6 or under, £100 or over.
Jay here knows that Zoopla can provide valuations for any home in the UK, so we can see what that new couple across the road might have paid.
Ooh la la.
Have a nose at what the curtain twitchers next door could sell for, and even see what his own place is worth.
Cool, look at that.
Plus, Zoopla lets you find and compare local estate agents if you do decide to sell up. Think of all those new neighbours you'll be able to snoop on, Jay. If you want to know, just ask Zoopla.
Leading Britain's conversation, LBC, with James O'Brien.
Okay, here's another one. Donald Trump, do you approve of the way Donald Trump is handling the economy? And the number of people responding positively to that question is lower than it ever was under Joe Biden, of course, when the engines of influence in the United States of America were telling all sorts of lies about him. So it currently stands at 29%. And all of the American media is going, oh, my God, 29%. That's so low. That's incredible. And I'm going, 29%? How the hell can 29% of people approve of the way that Donald Trump is handling the economy? And that is the question that we come round to every 2 or 3 months, isn't it? Is how can anybody be in favour of this? And I don't like the simplicity of the answer that we have in place at the moment. I don't like the idea of it basically being bigotry and echo chambers. How can you like this guy? Well, I don't care what happens. I don't care how much it costs. I love the way he's treating immigrants. I love the way, you know, Americans are getting shot. Yeah, but they love immigrants. I don't care if they get shot because they love immigrants. You realize America is a country built on immigrants? Yeah, but I don't mean you. I mean them over there, the ones eating the cats and eating the dogs. But you know that he lied about that? Oh, yeah, well, you say he lied about it. Nigel Farage sat in this studio and said that he wasn't lying. It would almost, literally, I think he made a bet with Nick Ferrari that it would come true, that evidence would emerge, that Haitians in the United States of America were eating cats and dogs. Listen, I know Nigel Farage getting things wrong, Nigel Farage lying, Nigel Farage indulging in racism or racist tropes is very much dog bites man territory, not man bites dog territory, on this occasion, literally. But again, how can anybody still be in favour of it unless they love the racism? I do quite like what happens when you are charged with defending it, because that's the point about echo chambers, is that if somebody else gets into them, you end up having a little bit of a nightmare. I mentioned the Midas Touch organisation to you yesterday, set up by former Republicans. There's a young chap, well, I say young, I don't know how old he is, but he looks about 11, to somebody my age, and he's brilliant. His name is Adam Mockler, and he was on CNN with one of the former Republicans who has not seen the light and abandoned the party, but who has stayed in place even as Donald Trump turns the party into an absolute mockery of what it was before. And the reason I want to play you this little clip is that it shows you what happens, what you are turned into when you defend him. Scott Jennings worked for George W. Bush, still on board with the Trump project. And Adam Mockler, who I think is less than half his age, but four times as bright, just demonstrating here, live on television, what happens when you've sold your soul to Donald Trump. And it's just a beautiful exchange. Have a listen to this.
If you exit this with an Iran that has defanged as it relates to missiles, as it relates to an aggressive Navy, you take away their ability to make nuclear weapons, and you leave the remnant here unwilling to be a supporter of terrorism, that is an unequivocal win for the United States
of America. I want to show you the very careful wording Scott is using here. He's saying, if that happens, which means that he disagrees with Trump's statement that it already has happened. I cannot believe you invoked an international coalition just 2 minutes ago when Trump already tried that. Trump announced 2 weeks ago he was gathering an international coalition of ships to escort their countries, to escort ships through the Strait of Hormuz. Guess what? No countries answered because he spent the past year threatening to invade Greenland. So now,
matter of fact, he said he didn't need them.
I mean, he said he didn't need them. I was going to get there. Then he comes all the way back around to saying, listen, I didn't break up with her. Or no, sorry. She didn't break up with me. I broke up with her. I didn't need them in the first place.
You almost had it.
I almost had it.
You screwed it.
I want to ask you.
You screwed it up.
Do you agree with, yes or no? Do you agree with Trump that this war is won?
I agree that we have devastated their military.
Do you agree that we've won? He said we've won. Yes or no? It's not a hard question.
Well, I mean, if you consider a condition of winning destroying their military capabilities, their missile capabilities.
We haven't. Wait, if that's true, why can't the Strait of Hormuz be opened if their military is destroyed? Wait, I want to hear.
Hold on 1 second. Here is, you know, the big picture question I do have here, Scott, is if it is true that we have won, why are we sending the 82nd Airborne?
Thank you. To be prepared for what happens next.
Why is the Strait not open if we've won?
If we've won, why are you sending the United States Airborne? Well, to prepare for what happened next. What? I love that guy. So you'll be familiar probably with the work of Don Lemon, the American television journalist who was a host on CNN. He has been drawing his audience's attention to a little-known British broadcaster recently called, what's his name, Keith? James O'Shaughnessy, James O'Brien. Let me return that favour across the Atlantic by drawing my audience's attention to a lesser known on this side of the Atlantic American commentator, Adam Mockler, working for Midas Touch. That was just beautiful. Just keep that. And of course, Laura Koonsberg could learn from that with the British supporters of this war. Has he won? Nigel Farage back in the studio with his season ticket. Unless he gets stuck in the revolving door, he'll be sitting down with Laura Koonsberg on a Sunday soon, even though he's still technically boycotting the BBC. Has Donald Trump won this war? Because he says that he has. Okay, if he has, why is he sending troops? Why is he sending US airborne? And if he hasn't, why is he lying about it? I don't know why they don't do it. But I do know why. It's because they're terrified that they won't come back into the studio. Which reminds me, it's 12 years now since I had Nigel Farage in the studio. I accepted his challenge. Why won't he accept mine? Anytime you want, mate. In you come. We'll even postpone Riley's reform roundup for the day. PMQs is on the horizon. Natasha Clark will be shimmying into the studio imminently, and we will be finding out whether or not this week Kemi Badenoch continues to channel Basil Fawlty, or whether or not she actually defies the instruction that he famously made.
Don't mention the war.
Thank you, John. Basil. Natasha, hello.
Hello.
What do we reckon?
So I've just come out of a very interesting briefing with the Home Office about foreign interference in our politics. And I wonder if Keir Starmer might be about to use this, because Sir Philip Ryecroft, who has conducted this review, has recommended that the government ban crypto donations. And obviously we know that's one party that's going to be affected by that is Reform. And I wonder, we've seen obviously Steve Reid, the Housing Secretary, the Community Secretary, and we expect to see him and hear from him later after PMQs, about the impact of sort of foreign interference on our democracy. We hear about the purported threat from China, from Iran, from Russia. I wonder if Keir Starmer might use this at PMQs to try and make a little bit of a pop at Reform. I think it's one possibility.
Which would also involve probably not answering whatever question it is that Kemi Badenoch has asked him. Do you think she will mention the war this week?
It's hard to know. I mean,
Come on, you've got to answer the question.
She should.
Yeah, I know she should, but will she?
I'm trying to do a politician's answer there.
I know you are.
Yeah, go on. I think she will. Yeah. I think she'll mention it in some way.
I can't see how she doesn't. So I just want to make one thing clear, because people might not know that the inquiry that you refer to, Sir Philip Ryecroft, was called as a consequence of Nigel Farage's close friend, protege and former leader of his party in Wales being sent to jail for taking money from a Kremlin stooge in return for parroting Kremlin talking points in the European Parliament. So the grounds for the investigation are also relevant, of course, to Nigel Farage.
Completely. Yeah, so there might be an opportunity for a pop shot there. But in terms of what Kemi Badenoch might mention, she might decide to talk about Morgan McSweeney. She might decide to talk about the revelation that we saw over the weekends that his phone was stolen, whether that has any impact on what the messages might be for Mandelson's appointment, yes or no.
It reminded me a bit of the Rebecca Vardy story, that, when I saw the headline. Yeah. But actually, when I read the story, it didn't, because he reported his phone as being stolen the moment it was stolen. And the Metropolitan Police in the news today didn't properly investigate. They made a mistake. They didn't treat it with the importance that they perhaps would have done had they known that 6 months later it was going to be at the centre of the Mandelson inquiry. So I think it's important important for me, actually, to have got across the facts on that before I talked about it, because there is no suggestion or no grounds for suggesting that anything happened here other than his phone really did get stolen.
His phone really did get stolen.
And told them immediately.
Exactly.
Presumably on somebody else's phone.
For sure, yeah, on his personal phone, actually. Yeah. So the Metropolitan Police have just sent us the transcript of exactly that phone call. He did report it to the police. It did happen in October. Okay. They've just literally just sent it to us.
I know we're talking about Kemi Badenoch, and we're applying the laws of logic, but how's she going to get anything out of something?
I think she could imply that
it's a big nothing burger.
Exactly. I think she could just suggest that there's something silly going on here, that the government, that Morgan McSweeney is doing something that he shouldn't have done. Alternatively, there's a huge array of topics that she could go on. We obviously heard from Rachel Reeves yesterday talking about how the government might support us on energy bills. It's a big ask for her to get the government to do more than what they've already said that they're going to do, which is help the most targeted, the most poor families with their energy bills when the time comes. But you can imagine her pushing, saying, why won't you talk about all the details now? Why won't you explain exactly how you're going to help those families now? So potentially.
It is again a shame, almost, speaking from a position of patriotism, that the leader of the opposition isn't Being a little bit more like Keir Starmer was during the Ukraine invasion by Russia, you know, that it felt as if we were at least seeing a semblance of unity from our political club.
Yeah, she definitely doesn't want to put that air of unity, that air of sort of, you know, collaboration and working togetherness across at all. She's determined to find blue water between the two parties on this one. Right. So, yeah, I don't imagine her coming out today and supporting what Keir Starmer's doing on the war in Iran at all.
Or admitting, yes, she might that go on she was wrong when she attacked him for not supporting the war in Iran, yeah. And then claiming, I think, a week later or 2 weeks later that she never said he should support the war in Iran, despite saying we should do everything we can to support our allies, the United
exactly,
States.
But she never said we should get involved. She just didn't say we shouldn't not get involved.
Do everything you can to support them by not doing anything.
Exactly.
In a different way from Keir Starmer not doing anything. Because the way he's not doing anything is categorically not the right way not to do anything. And if I was Prime Minister, I would not be doing anything in a very different way from Keir Starmer. Let's see if she actually says that.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I asked the Prime Minister 6 questions last week, and he didn't answer a single one. He has a duty to this House, Mr. Speaker, to answer the question. Let's see if he can do better this week. I'll start with a simple one. Will the Prime Minister approve the licences for Rosebank and Jackdaw gas fields in the North Sea?
Prime Minister.
Mr. Speaker, under statute, that is a matter for the Secretary of State, as she knows, because it's the same arrangements that were in place under the last government. Licences were granted. They were then struck down because of the defects in the process of the last government. But, Mr. Speaker, oil and gas is coming out of the North Sea 24/7. It will be part of the energy mix for many years to come. We fully support all existing oil and gas fields throughout their lifespan, and in November we made changes to extend to allow neighbouring fields to be exploited. But we need to take control of our energy prices. The only way to do that is through renewables. The party opposite used to make that argument. One of their senior figures in 22 said this: it's investment in nuclear and renewables that will reduce our dependence on fossil fuels and keep our consumer costs down. Who was that senior figure? The leader of the opposition.
This is not the day to be thrown out with a 2-week break coming. Come in, Ben.
Mr. Speaker, we can have renewables and oil and gas. He says it's a matter for the Secretary of State. He says it's a matter for the Secretary of State. I thought he was the Prime Minister. And he loves to hide behind legal process every single time. I wonder, Mr. Speaker, what a Director of Public... What have
order, I... Order, order, order. Mr. Yeltsin, you don't want to test my patience, I'm sure. Ken Benton.
Mr. Speaker, the Prime Minister loves to hide behind legal process. I wonder what a Director of Public Prosecutions would make of the defence. Sorry, I can't produce my WhatsApps. My phone's been stolen. The Jackdaw gas field could be up and running before winter. All that gas would be used here in the UK to heat 1.6 million homes. That is enough to power Norfolk, Suffolk and Essex put together. So will the Prime Minister approve the licences, or is the Energy Secretary running the government?
Prime Minister.
Mr. Speaker, legislation has been passed. It's absolutely clear that the quasi-judicial duty under legislation rests with the Secretary of State. I really think, if she's going to put this challenge to me, she needs to read the legislation. That is the legislation that they applied for 14 years. It's exactly the legislation that they used to put the licences in place, which were then struck down because the process was defective. But, Mr. Speaker, let's be clear. When Russia invaded Ukraine, energy prices doubled. The 12-day war, oil prices hit £100 a barrel. In the last 4 weeks, because we're on the fossil fuel roller coaster, everybody has been held to ransom. The only way forward is to go further and faster on renewables. And the leader... Mr. Speaker, the leader of the opposition's approach is to outsource our foreign policy and let the US decide whether we go to war, to outsource... outsource our energy policy to Russia and Iran and let them set the price of energy. I will never do that because it's not in the British national interest.
Mr. Speaker, he is hiding behind so many people. He is the Prime Minister. He can make this decision today. He can. He is so weak, he's the first person to be pushed around by the Energy Secretary. Let me remind him, Mr. Speaker, who is on my side. The unions, yes, GMB, they're on my side. Tony Blair. Mr. Speaker, Renewable UK, the very people that he's talking about, they are saying drill in the North Sea. Yeah. Centrica, Octopus Energy, even Labour MPs. Yeah. Let me quote the Labour member for Pembrokeshire who says, offshoring our carbon emissions might give a sense of moral superiority, but it is simply impoverishing our communities. Yeah. We agree. So why does the Prime Minister think he knows better than everyone else? Yeah.
I'm going to have one more go. The legislation, the statute, the law prescribes the decision maker. They know that. They should be embarrassed that she doesn't even... She's attacking me without having read the legislation. The legislation sets out who the decision maker is. It's the Secretary of State. It is not the Prime Minister. It has to be the Secretary of State, and it's a quasi-judicial process, exactly the process that they ran for many years. And, Mr. Speaker, oil and gas is part of the mix for many years to come, but we do need to get onto renewables. But, Mr. Speaker, we're discussing this because of the war. We need to de-escalate. And that is, yes, we are. That is why I stuck to my principles, not to join the war, and to act in collective self-defence. I appreciate the Leader of the Opposition doesn't get that. She wanted to jump into the war without regard to the consequences and then do a mother of all U-turns, and now she's stranded without a thought-through position. And, Mr. Speaker, when she was asked at the weekend whether she approved of the war, she said, that's a difficult one. It certainly is if you've got absolutely no judgment.
Mr. Speaker, I'm going to let the Prime Minister in on a secret. He's the Prime Minister. He can change the legislation. Hiding behind the Energy Secretary is pathetic. Mr. Speaker, under his Labour government, we buy half the gas we use from Norway. Last year, Norway's Labour government drilled 49 wells in the North Sea. That's what Norway's Labour government did. How many did Britain drill? Zero. For the first time since 1964, yep, under his government, Britain drilled no wells. Why is energy security the right policy for Labour in Norway, but the wrong policy for Labour in Britain?
Yeah. Mr. Speaker, so now our attack is if you changed and passed some different law, you could take the decision, which he's challenged me today for not taking. It's absolutely ridiculous. All that would do is to slow the process down. Oil and gas is coming out every day. There's a mix of that and renewables. But it's really important, Mr. Speaker, the most important thing to get energy security is to ensure we de-escalate this war. I know where I stand on this. We are not joining the war. She wanted to join the war. She didn't think through the consequences, and now she doesn't know where she stands on the most important issue facing this country at this time.
Mr. Speaker, the Norwegian Prime Minister is doing what is right for his country. If only our Prime Minister would do the same. Stopping all new drilling in the North Sea was a reckless promise when he made it before the election. In the middle of a global energy crisis, it is catastrophic. Yeah. Experts are predicting a £300 rise in bills in July. Approving new licenses would show he was serious about cutting bills. Yeah. Why won't he do it?
Mr. Speaker, because of the action that we've taken, bills are coming down by up to £100, household bills, next month. Then they will be capped for 3 months. That's what we're doing to protect households across the country. And who voted against it? The Tories and Reform, because they just don't get the impact on working people that we will protect.
Joe Bairn.
Mr. Speaker, he says bills are coming down. They are higher than they were when he came into office. And he's talking about, he's talking about what they're doing to help with energy bills. Families and businesses will suffer from the spike in energy costs because of his decisions. He could abolish the green taxes on their bills. He could stop the fuel duty rise. We could drill our own gas in the North Sea. What's he doing? He is planning another giveaway to people on welfare. Yet again, he's taking money from those who do work to give to those who don't. First, we had the budget for Benefit Street. Now it's the bailout for Benefit Street. Doesn't this just prove that they've given up being the Labour Party and they're now just the welfare party?
They're the ones that double spend on welfare, Mr. Speaker. They're the ones with a broken system. And when we try to mend it, what did they do? They voted against it.
Order, order. Mr. Dewhurst, you're tempting my patience.
Thank you, Prime Minister.
Mr. Speaker, she talks about the spike in energy prices. That's because of the war, which I say we shouldn't join. And she says we should join without following through on the consequences. And time again, she gets the big calls absolutely wrong. She wanted to drag us into the war. She got that wrong. She opposed taking control of energy security, and she got that wrong. She opposed our decision to cut energy bills, and she got that wrong. And she seriously thinks that'll make her relevant, and she's got that wrong.
Debbie Abrams.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Can I thank the Prime Minister for the new funding for 3 new primary school nurseries in Oldham? But can I ask him specifically about Monday's liaison committee when he agreed that Israeli settlements in the West Bank are unlawful and that their expansion threatens the viability of a Palestinian state? Yeah. Will he confirm, as he said he would, that any potential bidder for EU1 contracts from the UK knows that this is unlawful? And will he set out exactly what will happen as a consequence?
Mr. Speaker, let me do that. The Israeli settlements, including the E1 settlement, a flagrant breach of international law and threaten the viability of the two-state solution. That's why, alongside international partners, we've sanctioned those responsible and their supporters who incite violence. We've consistently urged the Israeli government to act to stop these incidents. We also recommend that settlement products are labelled so that consumers are informed, and will continue to take the necessary action to defend Palestinians and protect the two-state solution.
Leader of the Liberal Democrats, Sir Ed David.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Can I associate myself with the Prime Minister's remarks about Monday's despicable attacks on the Jewish community? Anti-Semitism has no place in our society. And given the potential links with the IRGC, I hope the government will move faster to proscribe them as terrorists. And, Mr. Speaker, as a former Secretary of State for Energy who granted licences for oil and gas exploration, can I make a judgment on this argument? The Prime Minister is actually right, and the lead option is wrong. Mr. Speaker, the law is clear and I believe in the rule of law. Mr. Speaker, just before President Trump posted about his supposed negotiations with Iran on Monday, traders made hundreds of millions of dollars of extra bets on oil futures. This looks like Donald Trump giving his mates insider information so they can make themselves richer, while his illegal war in Iran makes everyone else poorer. This looks like corruption of the very worst kind. Does the Prime Minister share my fear that Trump is making his war decisions based on what enriches himself and his friends rather than what makes peace in the Middle East?
Prime Minister.
Well, can I thank him for his verdict? At least he's read the law that she obviously hasn't read. But, Mr. Speaker, in relation to the traders, we've seen the activity there. What I can say is that all of my decisions are based in the best interests of our country, and that's why I've decided that we will not get dragged into the war, unlike the leader of the opposition, and I've decided we will act in collective self-defence of ourselves and our allies. And so I comment on my actions, and they're the principles behind my actions.
Fred Davey.
Mr. Speaker, if Trump's war pushes up energy bills by £500, the Chancellor's very narrow plan simply won't cut it. And while I don't fall for the crocodile tears of the leader of the Conservatives, who cheered on this illegal war without a thought for the impact on people's energy bills, and the government is right to reject repeating Liz Truss's blanket check approach. But, Mr. Speaker, the government can't ignore the millions of families who don't get benefits, who already face a cost of living crisis. So can the Prime Minister at least guarantee to all those families and pensioners that he won't let their energy bills go up by £500 this year?
Well, let me say my verdict. He's right about the Leader of the Opposition wanting to join the war, and she's wrong about that. At least he's read the legislation that I'm being challenged on. It does help. It does help. At least he's right. It was the leader of their party that said, let's all go to war without thinking through the consequences. We're now discussing the consequences. Mr. Speaker, in relation to the support, we've made clear the principles, the approach we'll take. We'll keep this under careful review. Energy bills for households are frozen until, are capped until the end of June. It's really important I make clear that that's whatever happens in the conflict, because I know the public are concerned about that. We will then put in place appropriate support and look at how we put the principles behind it.
Durham Pathé.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and can I associate myself with the Prime Minister's remarks on the terrible Golders Green attacks?
Mr. Speaker, 19 minutes after 12 is the time. Well, she did it. She didn't mention the war, Natasha. Both said she should, and
she
both.
Never does.
I don't know. Can people see this? Is this one of the things that goes out live on YouTube, or are they just watching it later on YouTube? Hi, YouTube. You could see from our you could see my expression. I don't know if you could see Natasha's. We were kind of just doing that thing where you go, could she actually not mention the war for the second week running? I mean, she can't, can she? And then you sort of go, is Cammy Bade or not? She can. And she did.
This is LBC.
Hi, I'm looking for a pair of jeans.
Right. Low slung, slouchy, wide leg, bower leg, curved leg, flared, straight or skinny?
Blue?
Fashion. It's hard to keep on top of. Other things, like the upcoming changes to renting, are a bit easier. If you are a landlord and you have existing tenants, you must send them a copy of the government's information sheet by the 31st of May, or risk a fine. Find out more at gov.uk/renting-is-changing.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. HolidayParkAdviceCentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Pain in my hip.
I keep feeling dizzy. I'm getting migraines more often.
There's another way to contact your GP practice, by simply sending your symptoms and requests through their website or the NHS app. We're delivering an NHS fit for the future. Tap it, type it, and we'll take care of it.
Julia, how do you spell vertebrae?
Oh, just type pain in the neck.
A southern train is a place where you can wind down and catch up. A chance to let conversations flow and plans unfold. And swap doom-scrolling for telling stories too good for the group chat. Make the journey part of the joy and save 1/3 with off-peak group tickets at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
This is LBC.
With Vauxhall. Energising a better Britain.
21 minutes after 12. Some stuff that I think everybody needs to properly understand. The first would be the fact that nobody is suggesting that new drilling, new sites, in the North Sea would help ease the current energy price crisis caused by the US-Iran war that Kemi Badenoch, of course, was in favour of until she wasn't and may well be in favour of again. Channel 4's fact check on this is probably the best place to start. The experts seem to be united in the view that you'd be much better off ramping up production in sites that are still active. There are hundreds, I kid you not, of active offshore and onshore oil and gas production sites that the UK currently has. So that would be point number one. Ramp up production in sites that are still active. Prioritise accelerating production, which in many ways they're already doing. And that's going to be a short-term solution. The biggest short-term solution or long-term solution to the current crisis would be for the war to end. Kemi Badenoch somehow managing not to mention the war. Dr. Mark Ireland, a lecturer in energy geoscience at Newcastle University, said that increased North Sea production would be extremely unlikely to directly reduce energy prices. And then there is the point about Norway, which actually owns large swathes of the oil fields that are under discussion, whereas the UK government doesn't. So the money, the oil taken out of the sea or the gas taken out of the sea would be sold at the market rate on the international market. So how much of this Kemi Badenoch doesn't understand, genuinely doesn't understand. There's a difference between not understanding and not knowing. Because you can't really understand something that you don't know. So maybe if she knew it, she would understand it. Alternatively, she does know it, but she doesn't understand it. And that brings us to the question of the law, the very simple legislative process, which Keir Starmer was sort of simultaneously baffled and frustrated by, that again, she either didn't understand or was pretending not to understand. So not a great week, really.
I didn't enjoy that at all, did you? Just felt it, and I think it's frustration on both sides, really, because I'm frustrated that Keir Starmer doesn't seem to want to talk about anything other than attacking Kemi Badenoch for the war. Like, he's done it a couple of weeks in a row now. I think it was a great political argument when it happened, and I think he argued very strongly for 2 weeks, but I'm kind of sick of that argument now. I'm kind of a little bit bored of it, and I think, hopefully, you know, they'll move on to it. This is obviously the last
she
week
could
before
ask him
PMQs.
Questions, couldn't she, about the war? She could literally ask him, like, interesting questions about Davy did, about one of the elements of the
war. Are we sending anybody to the Strait of Hormuz? Yeah. How are you going to be getting the oil out?
Who are we allied with?
What are we using those bases for? All of those interesting questions.
But she can't, because she's gone full Basil Fawlty.
I think she just wants to try to make this division. She doesn't want to use the war to create a sense of the government working together with the opposition at this time of great crisis. She just wants to use it to create a wedge with the government and to try and attack them. So, you know, this whole thing over oil and gas licences, it is obviously a very live discussion and a live debate, because the government do have, and you've mentioned, you know, very succinctly all of the sort of problems around current exploration and new exploration. So the one that Kemi Badenoch was talking about at the start, the Rosebank sort of oil, this is new. So this is a decision that is on Ed Miliband's desk, not, as Kemi Badenoch wants to talk about, on Keir Starmer's desk. Yeah. But it is a decision for the government. You know, they have said for a long time, they said when they came into power that they were going to end all of these new oil and gas licences, which does mean that there will be questions about supply and where that comes from. And does that mean that indeed we need to be looking at that supply coming from other places? And as we ramp up renewables, which I think everybody agrees is a good idea
Not everybody. I'm sure Nigel Farage doesn't.
No. Maybe he doesn't. But most people agree that renewables need to be a part of the mix. Most people agree that oil and gas need to be a part of the mix for some time to come. And as we ramp up, there obviously needs to be something to continue to plug that gap. So the question is Rosebank, is Jackdaw those two oil facilities that will plug that gap? That is a decision the government could take. It's clearly a very political one. Ed Miliband clearly feels uncomfortable with the idea of breaking that manifesto promise, not to encourage more. It becomes ethical. And it's also a legal problem. It's been battered in the courts, and it's been, you know, various high court challenges that have gone there and back, saying the environmental impact will break our environmental laws.
That's a good point. And I suppose it's worth noting that two things can be true at the same time. So you would obviously have some impact in the long term on energy consumption if we were producing more fuel. But nobody, literally nobody, thinks that drilling in the North Sea is the answer to the current energy crisis.
And it's going to take years to do so.
Except Kemi Badenoch, who has, because I'm quoting her directly, she has literally said drilling in the North Sea is the answer to the energy crisis, which is demonstrably, irrefutably and categorically wrong. Which brings us back to the question of whether or not she is lying or just doesn't understand the most basic premises of the points that she's making. Clive has suggested that that she is being deliberately badly advised in order to further undermine her position. Now, I think that might have been true 18 months ago when she didn't seem long for this world, but it's not true now. They're kind of all in on Badenoch, aren't they, until they aren't. There's no... Jenrick's gone. I can't remember where. Farage's outfit, is it? Honest, poor old Honest Bob.
That's right, yeah.
A second chuckle brother. So there's no movement behind her. I mean, however bad she is, no one's really agitating to get rid of
her. You heard them right there. They were quite happy with her performance on the backbench.
So this is all on her. Not understanding the law, not understanding the nature of North Sea oil.
But they think this is a fight worth having. They think, the British public think, we should absolutely be drilling, because this is an argument that they want to have, whether it's right or wrong. It's not going to do anything for prices. It might increase the supply if you drill a bit more, but it's not going to bring it down, the prices. And it's also not going to come on stream for months and years to come. That's the whole problem with our energy infrastructure. It takes so long to get any of these decisions taken. This has been in the works for years. But just generally looking back overall at that session, tetchy from both sides, wasn't it? Both of them clearly quite irritated by the other. I think even the Prime Minister seemed a little bit on edge at times and really laying into Kemi Badenoch again over the war. What was interesting was, I thought, Ed Davey as well. The Prime Minister's right. The Leader of the Opposition is wrong on that oil and gas. And obviously he, you know, is talking about his experience in government there. He says the law's clear and I believe in it. I mean, is he just referring to the fact that it's the Secretary of State, aka Ed Miliband's decision, not the Prime Minister's decision? Or is he referring to something else? I don't think it was quite true. What did you think of his question on Trump and the insider trading potential corruption?
I don't know how helpful
that
was. I don't know. I mean, Starmer is clearly not going to come out and endorse the Nobel Prize winning economist Paul Krugman's analysis of this as potential treason.
Because he's going to say Donald Trump is corrupt
But Ed Davey is arguably speaking to Keir Starmer and an audience, and the audience might like it, because someone needs to start saying this stuff. Someone in the mainstream of UK politics needs to start calling out what is obvious to everybody watching, because Starmer can't for diplomatic reasons. Badenoch won't, because she's Kemi Badenoch. And Nigel Farage definitely won't, because he's so far up Donald Trump's fundament that when he breaks wind, Farage whistles. So we have a sort of curious stalemate in which only Ed Davey can describe from an opposition position what is obvious to everybody, that Donald Trump's regime is catastrophic and quite possibly corrupt.
Yeah, it's a really difficult balance for the PM to try and avoid dodging these questions while also, you know, subtly hitting out what he feels that Trump's doing wrong in terms of the war in Iran. So it's a really difficult line, and I think he is mostly treaded on the right side of it so far on Iran, and he's obviously upset the president with what he said to him in private. It's clear for that.
But it might have worked. And then the rule of law, and this extraordinary shift, and of course you could probably have seen it coming if you paid any attention, but if you were in favour of Brexit, Boris Johnson, Liz Truss, austerity, then the next place you have to go is to be opposed to international law and indeed domestic law. So when Ed Davey essentially joined Keir Starmer in pointing out what the law is, Kemi Badenoch's response was to shout, "Stop sucking up to the Prime Minister. Stop sucking up to the Prime Minister by believing that laws matter."
It's just a bit of a weird pernickety point, really. Obviously, Keir Starmer is the Prime Minister. Obviously, Ed Miliband is not running the government. I'm not quite sure where this sort of narrative that she's got, that, oh, it's Ed Miliband that's really caught, you know, puppeteering Keir Starmer behind the scenes. She clearly feels that this is a political argument to make.
Wasn't she in favour of net zero once? Wasn't the last government?
The entire government were, including the Conservative Party.
Has she forgotten that, or did she just not notice at the time?
Oh, you know, we at the time didn't understand what, you know, net zero would do, and we thought it was going too fast and blah, blah, blah. But yeah, they, you know, have completely U-turned on this. And it started under Rishi Sunak, and it's been a total U-turn from the Conservatives on net zero.
Still they cheer. Still they cheer. 12:31 is the time. Natasha Clark, great stuff. Shall I read that message from Nick, or would you not?
No, I prefer if you didn't read. Okay. If it's the one you meant.
Yeah.
No.
Okay. It's 12:31. Tim Humphrey has your headlines.
Keir Starmer has insisted it's for the Energy Secretary to decide whether to drill for fossil fuels at the Rosebank and Jackdaw North Sea sites after opposition leader Kemi Badenoch asked if he would issue new licences. The Prime Minister went on to say the only way to control energy prices was through renewables. Police are questioning two men after four Jewish-run ambulances were set on fire in North London. The men in their 40s were arrested on suspicion of arson with intent to endanger life following Monday's attack in Golders Green. A former Justice Minister has pleaded guilty to possessing drugs, including hundreds of pounds worth of crystal meth. The substances were found at the home of Crispin Blunt, who was the Tory MP for Reigate up until 2024. LBC weather, a mix of sunny spells and patchy rain for large parts of the UK, some wintry showers on northern hills, and a high of 10 degrees.
This is LBC.
With Moneybox, it's more than a stocks and shares ISA. It's investing in life's greatest asset, you. And with your money growing steadily over time, you can start living life on your terms. Join over 1 million people saving and investing with Moneybox. Download the award-winning app today. Moneybox, the means to more. Capital at risk, ISA and tax rules apply.
Lost World Play Barn, Dragon Castle Children's Farm, Jumping Pillows, Wallabies, Froggy Soft Play. Tommy Tractor Play Barn, Quarter Pillar, Rowing Boats, Towel Displays, Mia Cats, Honey Pot, Bears. Kids, put on your swimmers for Jungle Splash.
Yeah, let's go, Mum.
Right. Cannon Arena, Lemurs, Jungle Kingdom, Go-Karts, Wave Runner 2, Magical Wood and Cafe.
Nutcatch Adventure Park.
The sun goes on and on and on and on.
Book now at nutcatch.com.
The same band, the same chorus, different headphones. Discover hi-fi sound for yourself with the Samsung Galaxy Buds 4 Pro and get £50 off with code 50buds4pro at curries.co.uk when you recycle any old tech by the 28th of April. Your sound, your way. 18 plus, £50 off Samsung Galaxy Buds 4 Pro when you recycle any electrical item working or not working into a Curry's store.
This was made with human intelligence.
And artificial intelligence.
Just like Intuit QuickBooks business management software. If you're a sole trader earning over 50K from April 2026, making tax digital means...
you have to file your taxes online.
But new QuickBooks AI has...
automated tools to help make compliance easier.
I was going to say that. I'll do it with Intuit QuickBooks.
Wide.
This is LBC.
With Vauxhall. Proud partner of Team GB.
It's 12:34. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Apropos nothing in particular, Kemi Badenoch enjoyed a £7,500 getaway in February at the home of an influential anti-climate donor. This recently reported on the rather splendid Desmog website. The chair of Net Zero Watch, one of the UK's, as Desmog describe it, leading climate science denial campaign groups, chap called Neil Record, who I'm pretty sure was also involved at the so-called Institute of Economic Affairs for many years as well. So a £7,500 getaway for Kemi Badenoch at the home of an influential anti-climate donor. Reported by Desmog just yesterday. Well, it's a world that's full of coincidences. And guess what? Simon Marks has popped along as well, all the way from Washington, D.C., to talk to us about the tennis. No, I'm joking. To talk to us about the state of American politics. Simon, where do you want to start?
Well, I think we've got to start with where on earth are things now going in Iran? Because as we discussed earlier in the week, James, President Trump appeared to step back from the brink, said that he wasn't going to be bombing Iran's energy and power facilities for 5 days while he gave talks that he claimed were taking place with Iranian officials time to bear fruit. The Iranians, of course, now on an hourly basis are mocking him. I mean, insisting that there are no negotiations occurring. They, of course, could be lying, but absolutely poking fun at him by saying that President Trump is negotiating with himself, and Iran's military spokesman today saying that there are no circumstances under which anyone from the Iranian regime is going to come to terms with President Trump. If you look at this 15-point peace plan, this sort of new cunning plan that the Americans believe that the Pakistanis have conveyed to the Iranians. And there's all sorts of stuff going on here because Pakistan really wants to project itself as the powerful mediator in these conversations. Have they really sent that peace plan to the Iranians? They say they have. If you look at the plan itself, in as much as it is being reported by pro-Netanyahu Channel 12 Television of Israel, it appears to reveal President Trump's own mendacity. I mean, this is a plan that calls on the Iranians hand over and agree to destroy their nuclear sites in Fordo, in Isfahan.
Hang on a minute.
All the nuclear
sites.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. All the nuclear sites that President Trump to this day maintains were completely obliterated last year. It calls for the International Atomic Energy Agency to have access and transparency over Iran's nuclear activities. That'll be the same IAEA that had access and transparency over Iran's nuclear activities under the JCPOA, the Iran nuclear deal, before Donald Trump, in his first term in office, withdrew American participation from the Iranian nuclear deal and essentially eviscerated the agreement. It also calls on Iran to hand over its stockpile of enriched uranium. That'll be the same stockpile of enriched uranium that President Trump says doesn't exist because Operation Midnight Hammer destroyed it. And then there's what the president had to say in the Oval Office yesterday about the disposition of Iran in its current incarnation following 3.5 weeks of U.S. and Israeli bombardment. Let's take a listen.
They have no Air Force left. They have no anti-aircraft equipment left, no radar left, no leaders left. The leaders are all gone. Nobody knows who to talk to. But we're actually talking to the right people, and they want to make a deal so badly. You have no idea how badly they want to make a deal.
The leaders have all gone. The leaders have all gone. Nobody knows who to talk to, but we're talking to the right people.
Yeah, that's
this
a relief.
Top person, phew, apparently the Iranian parliamentary spokesman, yeah, speaker rather. But also when he says there, you know, that Iran's military has been destroyed and they've got no facilities at their disposal, this is the same Iran that only yesterday the president conceded had fired 100 missiles at the USS Abraham Lincoln, every one of which, he says, was intercepted by the United States and Israel, and so it posed no threat to the aircraft carrier. Now, either they've got no nuclear capacity, no ballistic missile capacity left, no military capacity left, and they're on their knees begging to make a deal, or they're still in a position where they can fire 100 missiles at an American aircraft carrier, and also two missiles that were sent in the direction of the US-UK base in Diego Garcia over the weekend, yeah, one of which reached its target. So how you know what is true and what is not in this telling of events that tumbles from the White House is a daily challenge.
I mean, it's beyond that, and yet it also isn't it? It's like deja vu all over again, but I don't know, I can't quite remember him ever quite offering up the two contradictory positions in the space of a single sentence. As in, we don't know, there's nobody left to negotiate with, we don't know who we should be negotiating with, but we're definitely negotiating with the right person.
Yeah, I mean, it's extraordinary, and extraordinary also with the comments in the Oval Office yesterday of the man who is essentially by the day becoming the American version of Baghdad Bob. you remember Saddam Hussein's old spokesman. I mean, in this case, the self-styled Secretary of War, Pete Hegseth.
We have a president of the United States that when he sends his warfighters out to fight, he unties their hands to actually go out and close with and destroy the enemy as viciously as possible from moment one. And that's why we see ourselves as part of this negotiation as well. We negotiate with bombs.
We negotiate with bombs, except, of course, we're not negotiating with bombs when it comes to the energy and power facilities, because the president that he so slavishly serves has decided to put a 5-day pause in all of that in order to give these negotiations in whatever state they're taking place an opportunity to advance. I do think it's also important to underscore, James, that even while the president appears to be looking for an off-ramp, He is flooding thousands of additional troops to the region, including paratroopers. And it is perfectly possible that what we're witnessing here is not the Blackadder presidency, you know, where he stumbles from one cunning plan to another to find a way of bringing it to an end, and then they all blow up in his face and he just continues down the path that he was on previously. It is possible that what he's trying to do is simply delay things in order to get those additional military facilities to the region. And the idea that the 82nd Airborne is being sent in, I mean, these are paratroopers. These are people who jump out of aeroplanes and land on enemy terrain. It is boosting speculation here that he may be considering a limited, maybe not so limited, deployment of ground troops. And the difficulty about that is not only that it would be highly risky in terms of the military mission, whether the military mission is to control Karg Island in the Strait of Hormuz and or try and find the enriched uranium that he claims was destroyed last summer. Also, it would be political kryptonite here because he has not prepared the American public in any way for the deployment of ground forces and the real possibility of a substantial uptick in American fatalities in this war zone. He never even prepared the American public for the war generally in the first place. But the idea that he's sending the 82nd Airborne in is either a psychological pressure point designed to force the Iranians to the table, or he's really got a plan to escalate.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah, well, a table that they're already at, that they were at in Geneva. Yeah, exactly, that they were at in Geneva.
So you can't rule anything out, up to and including the idea that he'll launch another US-led Middle Eastern war in direct contravention and ignorance of all the lessons that were learned last time a US president did that. Here's a couple of things. I mean, if we were betting men, the idea that they'll sign something that is very similar to but not quite as comprehensive as the JCPOA, and that Trump will just do a lap of honour claiming that he's done something incredible that Barack Hussein Obama, because he always says Hussein for racist reasons, as you know, Barack Hussein Obama's deal was rubbish, which is why I torched it, so now I've got one that's much better, and everyone will know it's not better, but no one will tell the emperor that he's not wearing any clothes. That's a realistic outcome. I would suggest possibly more realistic than him actually going. Because unless you can get the mines out of the Strait of Hormuz, it doesn't really matter what happens on the Iranian mainland or on the island, the Karag Island. The question I'm frightened of asking you is whether there is now anybody in the room telling him the truth.
Oh, I don't think so.
One person.
I mean, with a singular... I think it's possible that Marco Rubio occasionally tells him the truth, and I think it's possible that J.D. Vance occasionally intercedes.
He's gone very quiet,
but
hasn't he?
Not... Yeah, well, very, very quiet, because he's hoist on his own petard, because in 2024 he said there were no circumstances under which a new Trump administration would invade Iran. It was for the regional allies to deal with. It was an ocean away. It doesn't matter to us. So he's got a problem there. I don't think there are no restraining influences on this presidency in any on this president in any meaningful way. I mean, when he twisted himself up yesterday into a pretzel by claiming that regime change has already taken place. I mean, that almost appeared to be him, again, preparing the ground to declare mission accomplished. A new Ayatollah in charge may not end up being the son of the old Ayatollah, could end up being the Speaker of the Iranian Parliament if the Iranians were to play ball with this negotiating process. I mean, it would give him some opportunity to claim that he'd won a victory, I suppose. But then what does he say to the Iranian people? I mean, to the people that he was telling in the early hours of March the 1st to rise up and prepare to take control of their own destiny. How does that work if he basically does what he's done in Venezuela, takes control of the oil and gas and keeps the regime in place while trying to condition its behavior? Are the Iranian people going to be expected to go along with that? It's going to become incredibly difficult. The only advantage to him of that would be that he would be able in some fashion to withdraw and try and start focusing on the domestic issues that he urgently needs to focus on ahead of November.
Finally, the Florida voting scenario, which again defies analysis, really, but here we are trying.
Yeah, so there was an election yesterday in Palm Beach, literally in Mar-a-Lago's constituency in the Sunshine State of Florida, and it was for a vacant seat in the Florida State Legislature, not Congress, but the Florida State House. There are two interesting aspects to this story. First, the most important aspect to this story is the Democrats won it, a solidly Republican seat. They turned it over, and that is giving Democrats reason to dream that Florida might be back in play as a battleground state. But even more tantalizingly, Donald Trump, of course, is a registered voter in Florida out of Mar-a-Lago. So he had a vote in this election and he cast his ballot. But he didn't show up in person.
What?
He did it by postal vote.
But surely not.
Postal vote.
But that's the end of the world as we
postal
know it.
The end of the world, the absolute, the soft underbelly of a completely compromised American electoral system is its reliance on continuing use of the postal vote. So he engaged in voting by post in this local election, even though, by the way, he was down there in Florida. He could have voted in person, did it by post. The White House says there's nothing to see here at all.
Yeah.
But, of course, there is gross hypocrisy to witness.
I have to just finish, Simon, because I know you're busy, with a comment from Trevor, who says, I doubt, this is in response to your comments about Marco Rubio, I doubt Rubio is telling Trump the truth. He couldn't even tell him his true shoe size.
Yes, those pictures are fantastic. Fantastic.
Well played, Trevor. Thank you, Simon.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
Has President Trump got into a war he doesn't know how to get out of? Is Britain far too passive about levels of anti-Semitism? And is another royal marriage in trouble?
Sheila Fogarty at 1. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Pain in my hip.
I keep feeling dizzy. I'm getting migraines more often.
There's another way to contact your GP practice, by simply sending your symptoms and requests through their website or the NHS app. We're delivering an NHS fit for the future. Tap it, type it, and we'll take care of it.
Julia, how do you spell vertebrae?
Oh, just type pain in the neck.
Go all Irish to France with great low prices. With Irish Ferries, you can for less. Irish Ferries, see travel differently. T's and C's apply.
Jay here knows that Zoopla can provide valuations for any home in the UK, so we can see what that new couple across the road might have paid.
Ooh la la.
Have a nose at what the curtain twitchers next door could sell for. And even see what his own place is worth.
Cool, look at that.
Plus, Zoopla lets you find and compare local estate agents if you do decide to sell up. Think of all those new neighbours you'll be able to snoop on, Jay. If you want to know, just ask Zoopla.
Spring has sprung. Buy any 6 bottles of wine and save 25% at Waitrose. Perhaps a citrusy lemonette agave, perfect with halloumi, fresh off the BBQ. Or Esprit de Puisigan with notes of ripe red berry. And maybe go all out with a crisp bottle of Veuve Clicquot champagne. Cheers to spring. Buy any 6 bottles of wine and fizz and save 25%. Waitrose, the home of food lovers.
Selected stores and lines, subject to availability, excludes Scotland box wines and bottles priced £6 or under, £100 or over.
This Wednesday, the £12 million Lotto jackpot must be won.
Must be won?
Yes, Lotto, from the National Lottery. It could be you. Estimated jackpot, rules apply, 18 plus.
This is 40-year-old Kathy, mother of two and self-confessed telly addict.
Ready? Oh, look at you, that's brilliant. Well done.
This is also Kathy, working as part of a team to keep things calm at her local prison.
Listen, speak to me.
And helping someone's son write his first letter home in 8 months.
Well done, you should be really proud.
Thank you, miss.
An extraordinary job, done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
This is LBC.
With Vauxhall. Energising a better Britain.
It's 10 to 1. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. No Riley's reform roundup today because Henry is doing some of his other jobs, including presenting duties overnight on LBC. But a couple of stories that you may or may not be aware of, and frankly should be. The first involves one of the people that we have discussed in Riley's reform roundup has been suspended as a mayoral candidate over the comments that Henry told us about yesterday. This is Chris Parry, who is the mayoral candidate in Hampshire and stayed in the post after saying that David Lammy should go home, who is from Tottenham, should go home to the Caribbean. He made comments about a volunteer Jewish group that safeguards communities, including Orthodox Jewish families, by describing them as cosplayers and likening them, for reasons that I don't actually understand, to Islamists on horseback, whatever the hell that is supposed to mean. He's actually been suspended as one of Nigel Farage's key mayoral candidates. And the other story that has a bit of a follow-up now was the one that Henry mentioned yesterday regarding donations being made to Nigel Farage or his party that were rather hard to work out the provenance of, precisely because they were being coming in as cryptocurrency, so you didn't actually have an ability to work out where they were coming from. There's also an Iran war dimension to some work that my guest Peter Gagan has been doing in the last couple of days regarding yet another donor to Nigel Farage's party, making a very, very tidy sum from his fossil fuel investment as a consequence of the unfolding war in Iran. But we'll come to that last, I think, Peter, because let's begin with, well, I should probably play a little bit of what has been happening in the House of Commons while I've been wanging on.
The responsibility to protect our democracy is a duty which every single member of this House shares. As a government, we are clear-eyed about the evolving threats we must contend with from those who wish to disrupt our democracy for their own gain and their own twisted purposes. We already have a strong toolkit to detect, disrupt and deter interference. And we are strengthening this through our Representation of the People Bill and Counter-Political Interference and Espionage Action Plan. But as threats evolve, so too must our protections. For this reason, I announced in December an independent review led by the former Permanent Secretary Philip Rycroft into foreign financial interference in UK politics. I would like to place on record my thanks to Mr. Rycroft for his thorough, diligent and swift work in rigorously assessing our political finance framework and identifying where further safeguards are needed. The full report from his review has today been laid before this House, and the findings are stark. Mr. Rycroft concludes this country faces a persistent problem of foreign interests seeking to exert influence on and to interfere in our politics.
What a shocker. And I don't mean that sarcastically. I just reflect upon the fact that some people have been warning about this for years, including Peter Gagan from Democracy for Sale, who joins me now. What would anything raise your eyebrows in that announcement in the House of Commons in the last half an hour, Peter?
James, in some respects, I think the most surprising thing was it's taken a long time for us to get here, but I think there's a lot to welcome in, actually, in Philip Rycroft's report. Like, full disclosure, I was one of the people who was asked to give evidence in, which I did do.
Should hope so, and too.
And I think, like people like you have been, and I have been talking about for a long time, you know, he's raising issues of foreign interference. He's talking about the need to cap political donations, albeit just on donations from UK citizens who are abroad, but that's as far as his remit goes. Mm. And he's also just raising really important red flags about the state of our political financing system in general. We're going to have a moratorium now on crypto donations, which I think a lot of people who look at this will welcome as well. They think that's the right move. The Electoral Commission is not able to deal with those with that at the moment by any stretch of the imagination. So I think it's taken a very long time, but I think it's really useful to now have a solid piece of evidence that does talk about the extent to which foreign interference happens in British politics.
And I suppose, I mean, it has taken a long time, and one wonders whether it would have happened at all if it were not for for the jailing of Nigel Farage's close friend and former protege and leader of Reform in Wales, Nathan Gill, for taking bribes from a sort of Kremlin proxy?
I think it wouldn't have. I think that's the issue that pushed us over the line. Wow. But, you know, we've seen so many instances like this, and we have, you know, it's so easy, as we've revealed time and again, democracy for sale, for foreign money to get into British politics, whether it's foreign political donations, foreign influence campaigns, you know, foreign social media and disinformation. And really, we've done nothing about this for a very, very long time. And it'll be very interesting to see what aspects of this review are actually taken on board by the government. There's an elections bill which is going through the House at the moment, so there's a real opportunity to do something about this. But, you know, we'll see how far the government takes on what Roycroft is saying. But he's really, as he says himself, he is kind of flagging. He says, I'm not hitting the panic button, but I'm raising the alarm. And I think that's exactly what this is doing.
A £300,000 cap on donations from British citizens living abroad, which, when you consider the tax circumstances in which some of them live while declining to pay tax in their country of origin, makes perfect sense. Bad news, of course, for Nigel Farage, the close friend and former mentor of the man jailed for taking bribes from a Kremlin proxy, because they've taken 12 million quid in the last year from a Thai-based investor called Christopher Harborne, as well as other donations from donors based in Monaco. And that is probably the only political figure are likely to be troubled by the moratorium on cryptocurrency donations as well, because he has not only put some of his own money, I think, into Kwasi Kwarteng's crypto operation, but has also been paid by crypto operations for services rendered, and has received donations in cryptocurrency, which renders the identity of the original donor rather hard to discern.
Yeah, there's definitely a way in which this is really going to hit Reform's funding. You know, Reform, not only that, they've actively been going out to try and elicit funding from UK citizens outside of the UK. So they've been going to Monaco, they've been going to other tax havens and trying to do this. Nick Candy has spoken about this. This has been a strategy for Reform. Mm. So Reform are actively looking for what are foreign donations. And similarly with crypto, they actually basically got the jump on the British regulators and said, we're going to take crypto donations, and very, very slow the regulators were to kind of deal with that. But more generally, I think is really interesting about this, James, is the first time we've seen a proper recommendation like this been for caps on political donations. And The Roycroft review is only covering it's only to do with foreign interference. That's his whole, so he can't talk about domestic issues. That's not what he's there to do. But I think it will raise the question more generally, which plenty of MPs and plenty of other people, myself and yourself and others, have talked about, which is a more general cap on political donations. Like, should it be okay that people can give unlimited amounts of money full stop, which is effectively what Harborne's been able to do with Reform. He's given £12 million in the last few months. It's a humongous amount of money.
And it's possible he's just very generous, or it's possible that he is hoping for something in return. We're out of time, and I don't want to encroach upon Sheila, so if you can do it in like 10 seconds straight, tell me the story about the hedge fund manager and other Reform donor, Jeremy Hosking, and the war in Iran.
Jeremy Hosking runs a hedge fund, got huge, lots of oil and gas interest. All of those interests have been doing very well because of the war premium. He's up at least $25 million by my calculations. Jeremy Hosking's spokespeople will say that the money is the hedge funds and not his, but he has put a lot of money, over £10 million into British politics in the last few years.
Find out more about that on Peter's award-winning Substack, Democracy for Sale. And of course, you can probably work out for yourself whatever Nigel Farage has to say about the subjects of fossil fuels and indeed the war in Iran, although he has gone a bit quiet lately, for which we should probably all be thankful. That's Peter Gagan, the editor of Democracy for Sale. If you missed any of the show, do listen back. Also, a range of podcasts available on Global Player and the LBC app, and you can download it for free from your app store now. Tom Sawbrick with you at 4 on LBC, but now it's time for Sheila Fogarty.
Yeah, I brought a special buzz to proceedings.
What is that?
There's a buzz that I can hear in my headphones. If it's not going out on air,
I can hear it as well.
I'm going to go.
That's okay. Okay, well, I'll fill in on this. This is Joseph Brown. That's all at all.
At three today, you can shush now. Rumours of another royal marriage being in trouble. Princess Beatrice is this time, but why the nasty misogyny? Who'd be a royal woman? Morgan McSweeney's phone, Labour colleagues and Conservative leader want more transparency over its loss. Let's talk about trust in politics. And Iran says America is negotiating with itself. Not quite true, but what is the plan Donald Trump is talking about?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock, the Prime Minister has told the Commons the UK needs to take control of its energy prices. He was asked by Tory leader Kemi Badenoch if he would approve licences for new gas fields in the North Sea. Sir Keir Starmer said it was a decision for the Energy Secretary, but the priority lies elsewhere.
We fully support all existing oil and gas fields throughout their lifespan, and in November we made changes to extend to allow neighbouring fields to be exploited. But we need to take control of our energy prices. The only way to do that is through renewables.
There is to be a pause on political donations made in cryptocurrencies. It follows a review by former civil servant Philip Rycroft, which the Prime Minister says sets out the stark threats posed by illicit finance. The government is to make it easier to suspend anti-Semitic and racist doctors under sweeping new reforms. Regulators will reportedly be given powers to suspend staff who demonstrate racist or anti-Jewish views. The changes stem from a review by Lord Mann into anti-Semitism within the Health Service. Secretary Wes Streeting told LBC a major overhaul is needed.
I've got Jewish people in my own community who I represent as a local MP who've told me when they go into my local hospitals, they don't want to tick kosher on the dietary requirements. They don't want to tell people that they're Jewish because they're frightened that they might get treated differently.
Former Prisons Minister Crispin Blunt has avoided a jail sentence after pleading guilty to possessing cannabis and crystal meth. The ex-Tory MP has been fined £1,200 after the substances were found when police searched his home on an unrelated matter in 2023. He told Westminster magistrates he doesn't believe possession of drugs should be a criminal offence. A woman who modelled for Vogue has been jailed for 7 years and 7 months for conning men out of tens of thousands of pounds. Gemma Kingsley faked being pregnant with twins and planned a wedding, telling her victim she was soon to inherit millions of pounds from her late grandfather. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 111 points at 10,076. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.16. The LBC weather, a mix of sunny spells and patchy rain for large parts of the UK, but there could be some wintry showers on hills in the north, a high of 10 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Tim Humphrey.
Donations to British Heart Foundation fund scientific research that can help save lives. People like Joe, who's pitching his next big business plan. Maria, who's sending out her wedding invitations. And Jack, who's just being a teenager again. Because when you donate, you fund more than just science. You help save lives. British Heart Foundation funds research that aims to cure inherited heart muscle diseases. But our work is not done. Donate now at bhf.org.uk and keep us beating.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello there, good afternoon to you. This 15-point plan that Donald Trump has been talking about in relation to Iran, is it a cause for new optimism, or is it an old failure of a document made even more defunct by the events of this war? I'll talk to John Sopel, co-host of Global's podcast, The News Agents, in just a moment, but let's hear from President Trump first. He said last night that Iran really wants to make a deal.
We're having, by the way, a tremendous success, as you know, in Iran. We had one in Venezuela, and now we're having one in Iran. They have no Navy left. They have no Air Force left. They have no anti-aircraft equipment left, no radar left, no leaders left. The leaders are all gone. Nobody knows who to talk to. But we're actually talking to the right people, and they want to make a deal so badly. You have no idea how badly they want to make a deal.
Well, it still has a big old stretch of water called the Strait of Hormuz left, that's for sure, and it's using it as you would expect. Speaking to reporters at the White House, Donald Trump said Iran has agreed to never again possess nuclear weapons.
You know, I said yesterday, what are the top 10? I said, well, number 1, 2, and 3 is they can't have a nuclear weapon, and they're not going to have a nuclear weapon, and we're talking about that. And I don't want to say in advance, but they've agreed they will never have a nuclear weapon. They've agreed to that.
Well, John's here, John Sopel of Global's podcast, The News Agents. You touched briefly on the 15-point plan that was emerging yesterday in the headlines.
It's a mess, really, isn't it? Because there is no direction of travel when it comes to his statements. They're all over the place.
Well, you don't know what to believe and what to disbelieve.
Yeah.
You know, do you buy into the idea that Iran are desperate for a deal and they're begging for a deal and they want a deal? And, you know, well, which bit of Iran is begging for the deal? Which person are you talking to? Do they have command and control over the regime? You know, so it's all very well saying we're talking to the right people, but how do you know you're talking to the right people? Are you talking to the people that are pulling the strings, or are they kind of puppets themselves? So that's one question about it. The second question about it is when he says that the Iranians have given us this big, beautiful present. Well, what is this big present? Third question is, are they really going to hand over all this nuclear material? Because what we've heard from the Iranians today is that the Americans are talking to themselves. This isn't part... I mean, this is what America would like to see. It's you, like you, Sheila, coming up with your Christmas gift list and giving it to Santa and saying, I want all of these things. Well, it doesn't mean you're going to get them.
No, it doesn't mean you're
going to. So I do think there's a sort of... And I don't mean to trivialise it, but I think there is an element of fantasy about what you are hearing from the White House now in terms of what is happening and what is going on. Now, I'm sure there are messages being passed, and maybe the conduit for those messages is the Pakistani military, who are in touch with the Iranian military, who know who to send these messages to. But I think to start thinking this is the basis for the deal that will end the hostilities, well, it might be, but I'd say there's a far bigger chance at the moment. I'm not saying that Iran is winning this war. They're not. Donald Trump is right that their army has been probably pulverised. Their air defences are gone. The Navy has gone.
But they have an economic whip hand
like
no other.
But they have an economic whip hand that there are no easy solutions to.
Mm.
And so it is the Iranians who have leverage.
I was speaking earlier, and we'll play the interview a bit later, to the diplomatic editor of The Guardian, Patrick Wintour, and he was saying, he was speaking with me about reports that J.D. Vance is heading over there in some capacity or involved in talks alongside the Pakistani elements you've described as well. And that, you know, one would imagine that he would take with him a different tone, certainly, than Donald Trump, but a different message, because he's been very anti-foreign incursions like this, hasn't he?
Yeah, he has. I mean, there's a wonderful clip of him from a year or two ago talking about how Europe should have spoken out and stood up over the invasion of Iraq, not gone along so quietly. And now, of course, Europe is being absolutely attacked by Donald Trump for having done exactly that. Mm. And, you know, arguably the Iraq invasion had more justification in the terms of, you know, there was a resolution that had gone to the United Nations. The United Nations have been totally bypassed in all of this. And there are question marks over whether this is a legal or an illegal war that was launched by the United States. There's also this question in my mind of... There were negotiations going on in Geneva that seemed to be bearing fruit. Now, there hadn't been an agreement, but it was pretty close.
Do we know that for sure?
I think we know pretty well that the gaps between the two sides had narrowed.